pink tights. What the hell is all that about, Brett?
This ain't no ballet class.
Sunglasses and sparklers. What a load of crap.
So, Brett, you're coming back to continue a legacy.
No.
Stone Cold's going to make your comeback a living hell. So you can start begging for some mercy right now. You will beg for mercy. I think you're not going to find it. That you're completely pathetic. You're the best there is. Son, you're looking at the best that there is. And Austin 3.16 rules, because that's how you pronounce it. I will kick your pink and black ass. I don't say that lightly. All over the garden. I'm going to end your legacy. You will beg for mercy at Madison Square Garden. You know, Brett, the whole world knows you quit the WWF.
Because you lost to Shawn Michaels.
The pretty boy.
You quit.
The boy toy kicked your ass all the way back to Canada.
You couldn't face yourself.
And you damn sure couldn't face your fans, if you actually had any. You ran away in shame. You should have picked another time to come back, probably. I ain't no sexy boy. When the bell rings and it's time to get down to business, I don't dance, son. I'm going to take 7 years of frustration and being pissed off. Think about it like this, Brett. Out on your ass. Finally, go home, look yourself in the mirror, and get a little peace of mind, because you will know that you were indeed beaten by a real man.
And welcome to episode 50 of the New Generation Project podcast, where we honour the heroes of Hulkamania and analyse the architects of attitude in looking at the dark ages of the WWF, the mid-90s. Today, we hit our half century of episodes and continue to answer the questions that you, the audience, posed to us in the New Generation Game 4. My name is Stuart Brooks, and I'm joined today by our very own New Gen Day. It's Big A, Adam Wykes.
Oh, hello.
And Medium P, Paul Scrivens.
I'll take that.
Excellent. How are you both doing?
I'm tip-top, you know, top. Good.
Feeling better after your illness?
Yes. Back on top.
We had some comments sent in that you could hear you deflating throughout the episode as the imitation Lemsip wore off.
Probably true.
Yeah.
I haven't listened back to that episode yet, and I'm a little bit reluctant to do so. I might not like it, so I might give that one a miss.
Okay.
But our listeners shouldn't. They should listen to it lots.
Thanks for putting people off checking it out.
Repeatedly. Listen to it on loop.
How are you, Adam?
I'm quite tired, to be honest. I drove to Birmingham earlier.
Any particular reason?
Just for a laugh. But I got stuck in the rush hour traffic.
Have you heard about the cabbies in Leicester?
Which ones?
I saw it on the front page of the Mercury today. That they are potentially going to stay some kind of go slow during rush hour.
Okay,
because it's not slow enough already.
Some kind of protest about something
making more money.
I don't know if it is money. I think it might be conditions or some kind of legislation to do with them. But yeah, it's like,
don't cabbies kind of create their own conditions within their cabs,
like air freshener and stuff?
Yes,
I don't know.
I don't know. Go slow then.
I think so. I think that would frustrate me greatly if I got stuck behind it. So I kind of want to find out where it's likely to be and then not be there.
Fair enough. Today's local news is brought to you by Paul Scrivens. East Midlands today.
Leicester today. Or probably already been, if you're interested.
So, 50 episodes. I know last time we talked about doing 2 years, but 50 episodes also feels like a milestone.
Oh, half century. Yeah.
I'll tip my bat towards the dressing room.
50, not out.
Yes.
Good innings?
Great. It's a solid contribution in anybody's book. Of course, what you really want to do is you want to go on and make daddy hundreds.
What's a daddy 100? Because you mentioned that last time.
A big 100.
Okay.
So if you get 100, you don't just want to get like 101. You want to get like 180. because that is 79 better.
I don't think we'll quite make it to 180 episodes.
Do you think we'll make it to 100?
Not in the timeline we've got, but you never know.
Okay.
You never know.
Oh, you're doing a little bit of the nose-tapping thing there, yeah?
No, my hand's nowhere near my nose.
Oh, you could have gone along with that.
Sorry. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But 2 years, 50 episodes, much celebration.
A little round of applause, I think, is warranted.
I have to hold my microphone, so I can't really do that.
No. Fair enough. So, today we're going to carry on answering all of your questions, the ones we didn't get through in part one. As Paul was feeling a little tired and ill, and I think we were all a bit under the weather last time, we sort of cut it a bit short. But this time, we'll go through them. You ready?
Okay.
So, I'll begin. I have, well, three questions, actually, from a Dr. Patrick Smith.
Ooh.
He has a question for each of us. For Mr. Scrivens, and this is a maths-based question, naturally. The question is as follows. Adam wishes to construct a rectangular box with a lid to house his entire Lego collection. Unfortunately, due to the immense weight of all the Lego, he realises that he must use a sturdier material for the base, which costs twice as much per unit area as that for the sides and the lid. Given that his finances are tight and that the total volume of the box must be 12 cubic metres, he has a lot of Lego, what are the dimensions...
12 cubic metres?
What are the dimensions of the cheapest box that he can construct?
I don't know. I'd like to work through that on paper. It's a lovely question. But I do know that Adam just keeps all his Lego under his bed, so it's a bit of a moot point.
So anyone wanting to rob our house, you now know where the stash is.
Don't do that.
Well, so much of it, like, it's not going to make for a speedy getaway if you target Adam's Lego.
Unless you built a car out of it.
Yeah.
How would you do the wheels?
You'd get those... Get the Lego wheels.
Little Lego wheels.
I don't own anything with Lego wheels, so you'd have to build out of the bricks. Your own.
You've really got no Lego wheels in that entire collection.
Nope.
Okay.
Have you ever seen the Lego Formula One car?
No, but I did read about it, I think.
I saw it live at a petrol station.
Was it filling up?
Shell petrol? No. No, it's Lego. But it was amazing. Like, it was like fully to scale. It was absolutely breathtaking.
What? Brand was it?
Ferrari. Okay. I think it was Ferrari kind of shell kind of thing. I believe they're probably just touring.
Could you sit in it?
Well, I didn't.
Oh.
I don't know if you could.
Fair enough. So in summary, you don't know the answer to Dr. Smith's
question. I don't know, but
question.
Maybe what I'll do. Maybe this isn't the time and the place, because I think we've got a lot of questions to get through. It'll take me a couple of minutes to look through that and pick out the pertinent information. But it sounds like a kind of fun task that I'll have doing. We know Paddy. He's a good mathematician.
Long time listeners will remember him as the man that got Adam drunk on Guinness and ruined our Beware of Dog episode.
It wasn't ruined.
It was significantly shorter than every other episode, and you left near the end to be sick.
It was stunted,
somewhat like the real show.
Mm.
My second question is for Adam, and also maths related.
Well, this isn't going to end well, is it?
It is. The hairy ball theorem was first proposed by the French mathematician Henri Poincaré in the late 19th century.
Oh, yes.
Can you briefly explain it to your listeners and discuss its potential relevance to two things in your personal and professional life, e.g. mullets and 3D video capture?
Oh, we did discuss this, but I've completely forgotten it. Something about you can't comb a hairy ball or something like that.
It's something to do with singularities, isn't
yes, it? Yes, it's something that, you know, if you tried to do anything to the hairy ball, you can disrupt more of the hairs on it.
Yeah, you can't comb it so that it's level all the way around.
Exactly, yes, yeah.
That is a brilliant concept, isn't it?
Plus, it's got a great name, the hairy ball theory.
Yeah.
I wouldn't advise combing your balls.
But it is a cracking name for a finisher. I'm not quite sure what it
the
would be.
The hairy balls?
The hairy ball theorem.
Yes.
Basically, that'd be a kick to the nuts.
Would that affect the hair dynamics? I suppose it would.
Yeah, it'd crumple the hairs.
And finally, my question for Mr. Brooks is, will you play our latest entry for the Montserrat Calypso competition on the podcast when we release it in a few weeks?
Oh, is it Bears Crossing the Road?
It is Bears Crossing the Road. He has sent it to me.
That's
or at the
good.
Very least, mention it in case there are any Caribbean fans of the podcast out there. Well, Patrick, I believe you may be the only person on the island of Montserrat that listens to us, but we can certainly play the song at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I've heard it before. Have you heard it?
I have heard it.
Yeah. Have you, Paul?
I've not.
It's really good. I quite like it.
We'll make it Christmas number one.
Well, when's your new single out, Adam?
We're doing a launch in March, I think.
March? Still a long way off.
Yeah, it's a way off. Well, the thing is, we couldn't fit it in before Christmas, and then it's not a good time to do it. It's sort of like early in the year, so it's a little bit later.
Mm.
Not Christmas number one this year, then.
But it's not a Christmas song in any way.
Doesn't have to be. It's to get to number one.
Number one.
No. But would
you look at some of the great Christmas number ones. They weren't all Christmas songs.
Was Mr. Blobby Christmas number one?
Yes, it was.
It was.
Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah.
That's very Christmassy.
That's it from Dr. Smith. Thank you, Dr. Smith.
Okay.
Just a note about that song. We played that song once, didn't we?
What song?
The Killing in the Name Of song.
Oh, God, at an open mic night, yeah.
Yes, I was there for that. Yeah.
It was the most inappropriate time and place to play that song ever.
Was it an open mic night at like a local village...
Community
hall?
Yeah, it was full of old people and children.
Yes.
And you peckers thought it was the best idea to sing Rage Against the Machine to them.
We'd practised it, so we were going to play it.
And what were you told when you came off stage?
Well,
don't come back.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
But no, there was a particular phrase, wasn't there? Something like, good set, don't play that song again.
Yeah.
I like the riff. It's a good riff. It's a good song.
It is a good song.
Right song, wrong place. Yeah. Wrong time, perhaps.
And I believe your singer was quite vociferous in their screaming of the refrain to that song.
Yes.
Well, you've got to be, really, haven't you?
Good times.
Yeah, yeah.
Shame there's no video.
It really is. I mean, how long ago was that now?
It must have been 6 years or so.
More than that, I reckon.
I don't think so, because I was with Mrs. Scrivens by then, so... So that limits it at most to be like 7.5.
Would have been good if it had been like the wedding party.
Yeah, it would have been. Shame it wasn't at the wedding, though, was it?
It would have been mildly inappropriate to perform
first
that
dance.
Song at your own wedding. Tom Hunter. What is the worst gimmick a great wrestler has had? Looking at you, 1991's Ricky, an actual dragon, this time Steamboat. And who is the worst wrestler with a great gimmick?
Well, I was thinking when you said bad gimmick for good wrestler.
Yeah.
I think Leaf Cassidy has to be up there.
Okay.
You know, Al Snow is... I didn't like that match that he had with Scorpio. But
famous for that
I am famous for that now, yeah. Yeah, I think Al Snow was good, but that was a bad gimmick.
Saddled with a poor gimmick. Okay, so I've got a few down here. A few we've seen quite recently. Hector Guerrero as the Gobbledygooker.
Oh, yeah.
Because we saw Hector Guerrero that time.
And he was good.
And he was pretty good. But, yeah. So he probably didn't deserve Dancing Turkey as a gimmick.
How did he get saddled with that?
Don't know. Probably just there backstage.
Unlucky.
Brad Armstrong as Arachna Man.
see, on paper, that doesn't sound as if it's going to be as bad as it probably was.
Too Cold Scorpio as Flash Funk.
Yeah.
Dancing 70s Pimp is a bit racist in 1996.
Yeah, and he's better than that.
Yeah. And Terry Taylor as the Red Rooster.
Yes, awful.
Because I think that did legitimately kill his career.
Isn't that the Mr. Perfect thing where there's two gimmicks up for grabs?
Yes, so supposedly they both turned up backstage the same day, Kurt Hennig and Terry Taylor, and there were two gimmicks, Mr. Perfect and Chicken. One of them got Mr. Perfect, one of them got Chicken.
Unlucky.
What about the other way around then?
So, yeah, I was struggling to think of that one. Worst wrestler with a great gimmick.
Like, would you have to go Cena?
He's not really got a gimmick, though. He's just John Cena.
But he had a gimmick.
Yeah, he had a pretty good gimmick.
But he wasn't
White
a great
rapper.
But he wasn't a great wrestler.
Yeah, but he doesn't deserve sort of worst wrestler.
No, but I can't really think of many in that bracket.
Giant Gonzalez, the gimmick's golden. The wrestler's terrible.
What was his gimmick? Sort of
being big.
Proto-human.
Proto-caveman type thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
that could have been quite good.
Good gimmick. What about Mantar? Great gimmick. Can.
Maybe.
I don't know. I've not really seen much of his wrestling, so I can't really comment on him as a wrestler.
Not good. I watched some of him on Wrestling Challenge earlier. It wasn't great. He did have his face paint on his face, like angled in the shape of a horn on his face, though, which I thought was good characterization, as Paul would put it.
So, yeah. So that's good then, right? Cowhead, good gimmick. Wrestling ability, not great.
Okay, we'll go with that then.
Good old Mantar.
Dan Davis. Which debuts from 1997 are you looking forward to discussing the most? Also, will you be doing ECW pay-per-views too?
So do you guys know of anyone who is debuting in 97? Is there anyone in particular you're looking forward to seeing? Do you know who appears around then? Because I've got a couple noted down.
Does Taka Michinoku debut in 97?
He does, and he is on my list, yeah.
So yeah, I'll look forward to him because I think I've seen a couple of bits and bobs of him from his earlier time when he came in, and it was actually really good and very different from his racist Japanese gimmick that he had latterly.
I'm trying to think. Kane is 97, isn't he?
Kane is 97 as well.
Then Kane.
Yeah. Plus, with Taka Michinoku, we get the fun of Paul pronouncing his name.
Yeah, and looking like him.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get Paul to, like, call the Taka Michinoku matches.
Mm. Like, I'll do it in first person.
It'll take less time than you trying to pronounce his name.
Exactly. See,
another name that debuts in 97 that I've got on my list, I had three people, you've named two of them, Ken Shamrock.
Ooh, mm. Yeah, yeah. So, early Ken Shamrock I'm looking forward to, because I don't think I've seen very much of that at all.
That music.
Mm.
And it's not too far into the year when he debuts as well, so we've not really got too long before he turns up.
We get a pretty decent run of Shamrock then.
Yeah, we get a year of Ken Shamrock, basically, because his sort of first major appearance is WrestleMania 13. So
when does Dan Severn turn up?
That's 98.
Oh.
We'll miss him and his grey T-shirt.
That's a shame.
That is. And we'll be doing ECW pay-per-views. Yes, yes, we will.
Which will be our first?
Yeah. Barely Legal, their first.
Okay.
Definitely doing that. I know OSW have done it before, but I think people want to hear us talk about it, and it is quite an important point in our timeline as well.
What month will that be in?
That's in April.
Okay.
Aki Munro, you guys are getting scarily close to the end. What will happen next? More Raw versus Nitro episodes? More wrestler retrospectives like the Steiner episodes?
Both.
I was going to let you two answer that one. So what does happen next after we finish the timeline? You tell me.
I'll probably get a cup of tea.
After the whole timeline's up.
Yes.
Well, I've still got the idea that I came up with.
What was your idea?
My idea was to come up with, because all the wrestling that's actually happened has been talked about, is my theory. So it's invent some wrestling to kind of talk about.
So we'd be talking about wrestling that has never actually happened?
No, part of the show. It wouldn't be like us commenting as we are now reviewing episodes, but more kind of almost like a spoof wrestling promotion, but done from different angles. So, you know, the agents backstage and
so this harkens back to your desire to write a sitcom, doesn't it? Let's be honest.
It does a bit, yeah.
Paul Scriven's wrestling sitcom. That's what happens next.
Well, that is a situation that hasn't been exploited yet, isn't it?
I think there could be some good stuff. And obviously, if it's audio, you've broken a lot of walls. You've got a lot fewer limitations.
Okay. Plus, you just want to do like that radio play in Frasier, don't you?
Yes. Ham radio. I can burst lots of balloons for gunshots.
Splendid. I do notice next to your toilet, you've got a book about 100 things not to do in sitcom writing.
Yes, I've read the first three.
What were they?
I can't remember. It's on target. I have listened to an audiobook on how to write a sitcom, and I read another book on how to write a sitcom.
Maybe I
read another book on different types of characters in sitcom.
Maybe we'll crowdfund a Paul Scriven's wrestling sitcom when we're done the timeline.
See, I do quite like the idea of doing it. It is a semi-serious suggestion, even though I feel a bit silly for suggesting it now.
Well,
given the looks on your faces.
I'm sure your adoring masses will be well up for that.
Well, one of the good things is, obviously, I've got quite a flexible voice and I could do lots of the characters.
So do us one of your impressions.
I don't want to give anything away now.
So would there be like a Geordie character in there?
There'd probably be a Geordie. There'd probably be somebody from Norfolk.
Someone from Texas.
Yes.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Take advantage of your range. There you go. There's your answer. Maybe.
This crowd, obviously, very much in to the champion, Hulk Hogan. But I hear in Chicago, along with Jimmy Hart, you can hear the response of this crowd, obviously, to your attire. This is not usual attire for you.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. Keep your mouth shut for a minute. And you, Jimmy Hart, my best friend and confidant, I don't want to hear a word out of you, brother. I'm here, head to toe in all black, brother, because the games are over, dude. It's time to take care of all the family business, brother. Now that I know the rules of the game, now that Kevin Sullivan and the Big Giant have to face Hulkamania, I'm going to play their game, brother. And just like I took Andre the Giant in the Pontiac Silverdome and beat him in the middle of the ring, if his son, that no-good stinky giant, has the guts to come out here right now, brother, I'll rip this neck brace off and I'll beat him right in the middle of this ring, brother.
Well, that's not going to happen, Hulk Hogan. Let me tell you why. There is a restraining order, an injunction. He has been barred from the Rosemont Horizon tonight.
Well, if that nasty giant is as bad as he says he is, he'll get out here right now. But let me tell you a little history about Hulkamania. A long time ago, brother, in the New York City area, brother, when Hulkamania was running wild, the promoter's ego got bigger than the wrestling business. And as Hulk Hogan pulled his troops out, the red and the yellow little holsters, a couple years down the road, as we speak, that promoter is dying and choking on his own ego. That's why the WCW, I was looking for a place for Hulkamania to grow, for the little holsters to become Redwoods. And now that I'm here, Kevin Sullivan is the man that wants to burn all the trees in the forest. The giant is the one that wants to chop those little Hulkamaniacs down. But I'm here to plant the seeds. I'm here to face him right now. So where is he?
Well, he is not going to be allowed in the building. You'll have your chance in Detroit at Halloween Havoc on October the 29th.
Oh, I know all about Detroit and Halloween Havoc. And if that giant's not man enough to face me eye to eye for the first time in Detroit, Michigan, because he shaved Hulk Hogan's mustache off Kevin Sullivan and that giant, they might as well have put graffiti on the Washington Monument, brother. They might as well have burnt the American flag, brother, because nothing. When I get him in Detroit, brother, I'm going to take that giant and I'm going to bury machine against machine. And after I put that giant in his place, the last thing I'll do with my immortality is beat Gorgeous George up in heaven. So what's that giant going to do, brother? He's going to face me. What's he going to do, brother?
Hold on. Our cameras are outside. Apparently, the giant has showed up. Get a monster truck!
What do you mean he's outside?
Apparently, Kevin Sullivan and the giant have showed up in a monster truck. The police
get him
are
in here right now.
They are restraining
him.
They are not going to allow him in the
I'll
building.
I'll beat him
tonight.
Right here.
I don't care, Hulk. He's not going to be allowed in the building. He's not going to be allowed inside. No, the police are keeping him away, Jimmy Hart.
Well, if he can't get in here to fight me, I can sure as hell get out there, brother.
Wait a minute. Hulk Hogan is heading for the barn. You recall what has happened in the past. The giant has literally wreaked havoc on Hulk Hogan and other members of World Championship Wrestling. We will follow this story as closely as we can, but in the meantime, Eric Bischoff, let's get back to you, along with Mick Michaels and Heenan here tonight. Oh, my.
Tom Canning, will Lord Gideon Grey ever ascend to main event status? Can you explain the WrestleMania spooning rule? And lastly, how come Shikara seemed to love you? What is the WrestleMania spooning rule?
No spooning at WrestleMania.
Okay.
Hang on. Adam says he's taking his inflatable airbed.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hang on. So talk me through that, because I need more than that to go on.
Spooning, as in bed?
Yes.
I think he's asking if we'll be spooning.
Oh, you two?
Presumably.
For some reason, I read that as there was some kind of WrestleMania yearly spooning event.
Yeah, all 100,000 people in the stadium each other.
This is a really messed up thing, because in my head, what I thought it was people might have been talking about is, you know, if the seats are very kind of congested and come together and people have to get up and you have to kind of really edge past them, but it's a bit too close to be comfortable. I thought maybe that was it, and you have to kind of like file into your seats in a particular order or
that's
something.
That's well known as WrestleMania spooning.
Maybe it should be.
You two have got some weird definitions of the word spooning. I took it for what it means, and no, we will not be spooning. As, yeah, Adam, you said you were going to take your inflatable bed.
Yeah, I don't sleep well with others.
We slept together in America last time.
Aye.
Will Lord Gideon Grey ever ascend to main event status? Well, I did see a very good comedy match with him and Rishi Ghosh against Colt Cabana and Matt Classic.
Who's Lord Gideon Grey?
He wrestles for RevPro.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they did a tremendous comedy match. I think it was at the June show where they'd said Colt Cabana had been banned from RevPro and he was allowed back in if he wrestled this tag match with Matt Classic. And in case you don't know, that's Colt Cabana under a mask.
That is genius.
So obviously he can't wrestle with himself under a mask as a tag team partner. So Matt Classic came out and he appeared to be a bit portly, Scottish and have a bum bag.
Okay.
If that gives you any idea who it was. Yes.
It was a Scottish Stone Cold.
Yes. That's it. But yeah, it was, you know, genuinely funny wrestling comedy as opposed to sort of bad WWE comedy.
Yeah.
So yeah, it genuinely laugh out loud. Very, very good. So no reason he can't do. And how come Chikara loves us? I think that is down to Mr. Canning himself, who I believe may have recommended us to Mike Quackenbush.
Ah, that's where it came from.
It may well be, yes. So thank you, Tom.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. S. Doyle Granger. What can I do to help get those mandible claw Christmas cards made?
I'm going to do it. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
It's going to happen?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I'm on it. And any and everything I will do. So kind of, we've got offer of support for you there, Stuart. As far as wrestling related, 1997 is my absolute favourite year in pro wrestling history. So what shows / matches / angles are you most looking forward to in the new year? Well, I'm going to go first on that because I mentioned Kane earlier. I have seen it before, but I'm really looking forward to Kane's debut. I'm also really looking forward to watching Survivor Series because I haven't seen that before.
Have you seen the match or have you not seen the
entire
card? I've
seen the finish. Right, that's all I've seen.
I've got down a few things. So Shotgun Saturday Night, which many people have asked us to cover, and I don't think we could...
Fondle Me Elmo.
This is Fondle Me Elmo.
Yeah.
This is Marlena getting her breasts out in a nightclub, and this is Terry Funk cutting a promo on everybody.
This does sound like the best show ever.
Yes, I think you'll be particularly fond of Shotgun Saturday Night, at least the first three episodes of it anyway.
Splendid.
The Austin Brett double turn.
Oh, yeah. Another match I've not seen.
Ever?
Nope.
Vader versus Ken Shamrock.
I bet that's heavy hitting.
Is that just an absolute slobber knocker, as Joe would call it?
I would say so, yes. I think it's one of those where they've brought Ken Shamrock in and they've said, calm down, Ken, and he's not calmed down. All right, we'll put you in there with Vader. And Canadian Stampede, which, again, I don't think either of you have seen that.
No, I've never seen that.
Possibly regarded as one of, if not the best WWF pay-per-view of all time.
Okay.
So, and that's midway through 97. Zach Ruggiero, what is your favourite modern promotion?
I'd probably say, I mean, not that I've seen a whole lot of it, but PWG.
Okay.
But certainly from the clips that I've seen and the odd matches that I've watched, I just, in all honesty, haven't seen a lot of shows from other promotions recently. But the bits that I've seen of that have been stellar.
Yeah, PWG is very, very good. But Lucha Underground, that has really taken me in a whole new way because it's a very different type of promotion.
What spoke to you in that then?
Well, the fact that they've got an amazing actor playing villainous boss character and actually works again. The fact that they're using, you know, a bunch of amazing talent from loads of different promotions.
Yeah.
And I just think it's the production values are just incredible for it. And they've got people being eaten by mutant brothers and things.
Yeah.
I like that.
What more could you want?
Oh, yeah.
So I've got down, despite not watching Raw on a weekly basis, favourite modern promotion would probably still be WWE, due to the fact that I make sure I watch NXT on a weekly basis.
Yeah, true.
And there isn't any other promotion. Admittedly, a lot of the other ones I like don't necessarily run weekly, but I know I have to make a special effort to watch that show each week. And I do quite like watching the C&D shows, so like Superstars and Main Event, just for the random matches you get on there that are allowed to sort of play out without, you know, ad breaks every 30 seconds or Mountain Dew adverts or network hyping or anything like that. Second question from Zach. Which modern wrestler, Neville, Zack Sabre Jr., Apollo Crews, etc., would you transport back in time to wrestle with the new generation?
Steen.
Anyone you'd particularly like to see him face?
I was trying to think who'd fit in with stylistically... I think him against Austin would be good.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Yeah, that'd probably be what I'd go for.
Neville versus Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
That'd be amazing.
Fair enough. I've got down Sasha Banks so I can watch her wrestle Bull Nakano.
Oh, yeah. Bit out of left field with that, I thought. But good.
Yeah, I thought I'd go for something a little bit different.
Not obvious.
Nick B. Doc Brown, or the time traveller of your choice, says that he can use their time machine to go back and give a push to a wrestler in the new generation era and take ones away. Who would you put on top? Who do you relegate to being slopped by the Godwins? Is this finally the ascension of Marty Jannetty to main event status?
I've got push to take away, Diesel's face push in 1995, and push to give, Diesel's heel push in 1995.
Yeah.
So, for me, I think there's much more logical stuff for him to do in that year on that side of the fence, so... Heel Diesel versus face Brett, heel Diesel versus face Sean, heel Diesel versus face Bulldog, and heel Diesel versus Razor Ramon all sound more appealing to me than than face Diesel versus heel Sid, Mabel, and heel Bulldog.
I'd try to take away Mabel's push. I'm not sure who I'd give it to. That's the problem.
Anyone else?
Possibly Razor.
I was going to suggest that. I mean, obviously he's injured at King of the Ring 1995, but I think it might have been a more satisfying tournament had he won it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say Mabel, because that is clearly the one that shouldn't have happened. As far as someone that I'd give a push to, Bob Holly. I think, you know, he could have been pushed up the card and given really great matches rather than driving a race car or whatever he's been doing.
Where do you see him sort of fitting in?
Fitting in that upper mid-card role, I would
IC
say.
Title.
I'd say that he could have great matches with Razor. He could definitely have great matches with the Kid. He could have great matches with Sean, as long as Sean wasn't being a bellend about it.
You just smack him.
Yeah. So there you go. Also, what is your favourite move spot you wish would make a comeback in WWE? Brainbuster, pile driver, giant men doing suicide dives for no good reason, etc.
Big fat man gets tied up in the ropes.
Andre the Giant.
Andre the Giant loved it. Bring it back. Get Kevin Owens on it.
Humongous back rakes.
Tedious headlocks.
Tedious chin locks.
Yeah.
Yokozuna nerve holds.
James Martin, celebrity chef here. Who would go over in a match between Baby Scrivens and Baby Finn, my seven-week-old? Baby Scrivens has the age advantage, but Baby Finn is named after a demon.
So I feel like you should answer this one.
To be honest, if Baby Finn had tried to take something of Baby Scrivens off him, I don't think he'd stand much chance.
Is he a bit defensive of his toys?
Depends what it is and what mood he's in, how tired he is, but yeah, he can be.
Plus the age gap between like 2 and 7 weeks is pretty big.
So kind of, you know, there is the intimidation factor with the name, but I think Baby Scrivens has got it covered.
Craig Pearson, what are your guys' favourite current TV shows?
Do you want the serious answers?
Yes.
So things like Sons of Anarchy, as we kind of discussed last episode, I'm kind of into and watching at the minute. Just as general TV stuff, I like The Apprentice. Adam, you say some of yours.
BBC Breakfast News.
Anything with Steph McGovern in it.
I think that's the only programme with Steph McGovern in it.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't really watch much television as it's broadcast. Pointless, I quite like.
See, that's what my note says. There's actually very few things on our television other than the WWE Network, and they are BBC Breakfast News, Jinx TV, The Food Network, and Match of the Day.
Oh, what about Naked and Afraid?
Naked and Afraid. I totally forgot about Naked
like
and Afraid.
Like a bit of Naked and Afraid.
Kelly's Kitchen?
Still not watched it. I've put down the shows I quite like, The Walking Dead.
Yeah, it's good.
You not watched that?
No.
And Archer.
That's great, yeah.
Ooh, Gogglebox. I like Gogglebox.
Watching programmes about people watching programmes.
See, this is an idea that I had years and years and years ago that I swear I told Adam that we had such entertaining conversations while watching the telly, somebody should film it.
Is that not the plot of The Day Today? Like a show on The Day Today years and years ago? Isn't that one of their spoof television programmes, people watching
Possibly,
television?
But I may not have had the idea before that, but I didn't know of it, so I'm still claiming it as an original idea.
But yeah, Naked and Afraid, we've watched tons of that. Completely forgot about that. And anything on the Food Network generally. It's getting towards Christmas, so they'll have plenty of Nigella Lawson on there. Adam's a big fan of Nigella Lawson.
She's
defied age.
She must be 50.
She's 53, I think.
53?
Yeah, it's quite astounding.
Yeah.
Mike Smith. Would you rather fight one Brock Lesnar-sized El Torito or 100 El Torito-sized Brock Lesnars? I'd fight one Lesnar-sized El Torito.
That's what I've got. That's not even a debate.
Because an army of even miniature-sized Brock Lesnars is still terrifying.
That's exactly the words I've put. 100 small Brock Lesnars would be terrifying.
I think you've got more of a chance of outrunning one El Torito-sized Brock Lesnar, whichever way around it was. I'm confused.
No, it's one Brock Lesnar-sized El Torito or 100 El Torito-sized Brock
Lesnars. Oh, yeah. I reckon I could outrun one. Or at least you got a chance. Maybe like climb a tree or something.
Whereas 100 El Torito-sized Brock Lesnars, one of them would get you reckon?
At least one. Vincent Kraskowskis, 1 year on. I thought I might just ask exact Wayne Sessions.
What? Exact Quayne Session.
Exact Quayne. Vincent Krasauskas. 1 year on, I thought I might just ask the exact same question that I asked on the last instalment. Is TNA effed or what? You've never seen Banged Up Abroad?
My note just says TNA will survive the apocalypse.
Well, it really is just kind of, hasn't it just got into this kind of
zone.
Plateau?
Yeah.
I say plateau, that applies some kind of height. But,
height, yeah.
But kind of, hasn't it just levelled off at some kind of nondescript height?
Yeah, there was some story recently, like they've signed some quite big TV deal in India, which will sustain their funding. But, I mean, no one watches really? It in the States anymore, viewing figure-wise. The pay-per-views draw about 7 people. So
it's really odd that it's a promotion that I just written off as, well, it's going to be dead anytime soon, about 2 years ago, and it's just still going.
I think it's just on life support.
Mm. Yeah, well done, whoever's keeping it breathing.
Someone in India, the great Carly. All his cement money is being put into TNA.
Don't forget, Halloween Havoc coming your way. Sunday, October 29th, only on pay-per-view. Machine versus machine, man against man. And now let's go to Hulk Hogan.
You know something, Hulkamaniacs? And Jimmy Hart, my best friend and confidant, garner of the WCW heavyweight title. We watched the whole world stand still last Monday night, Maniacs, as Hulk Hogan, dressed in black, made everybody shake in fear on Nitro, brother. Now everybody knows the evil within Hulk Hogan is real. Now everybody knows the things Kevin Sullivan have told you about me are for real, brother. Because now it's time to take care of all the family business. Don Corleone, Hulk Hogan, brother, is here to protect the training, the prayers, and the vitamins with one fell swoop, brother. You, the giant, has never yet looked me in the eyes, brother. He's never yet came face to face to feel the power of Hulkamania, man. He doesn't realize I can stop an elephant in its tracks. He doesn't realize I can make promoters drop to their knees and start crying because Hulkamania's more powerful than their whole stinking promotion. And what he doesn't realize is once I lock up with him in the Motor City, the test that I put to his father when I slammed him in front of 94,000 people is nothing compared to what I'm going to do to him, man. Number one, big stinky giant, you're treading on my turf, brother. You want to burn all the trees in the forest, man. You want to eliminate the new little Hulkamaniacs that believe in the training, the prayers, and the vitamins, man. And now that you've tried to crack my back, now that you've tried to crack my neck, brother, the stage is set for the ultimate showdown, Jimmy Hart. You know what I've got planned for these two rats.
You know, Hulkster, I'm worried, man, because you see what you told me that you were going to do to Kevin Sullivan and the Giant at Halloween Havoc. I'm worried, Hulkster.
Jimmy Hart, you better stay out of this, brother, because one by one, I'm going to line them up and take them down. First, it's Machine against Machine in the Motor City. The Bigfoot people are under the gun, because if they don't get the job done, I'll snap them in half first, and I'll hook up to the monster truck and drag it around the Motor City. But then, big, stinky, worthy, filthy giant, it's you and me, brother, eye to eye, fighting for the destiny of wrestling, brother, fighting for the truth that Hulkamania is the strongest force in the universe. And after I press you over my head, after I get you in the launch position, all the Hulkamaniacs, put on your seatbelts, brothers, because we're going for the ride. Once I put the giant down, I'm going to beat him and bury him in the Motor City, right next to his father. So what you going to do, big stinky giant and Kevin Sullivan, when the shadow, the darkness, the evil of Hulkamania gouges you?
Martin Zamora, what pay-per-view event that's in the overall timeline would you most want to be in attendance for?
In our timeline, it's a tricky one. I do like gimmick matches, but
you're thinking In Your House 5, aren't you?
Well, ladder matches, perhaps. Maybe WrestleMania 10 is hard to beat.
Yeah, that's fair, cop. Maybe Good Friends, Better Enemies, if I could be behind that table that Sean goes through.
Okay. Or you want to steal Mad Dog Vachon's leg?
I'd never steal the man's false leg.
I've got Survivor Series 1996 or Canadian Stampede.
Oh, which is the one that Sid's been most over in?
Survivor Series 96 or... international incident.
It was over.
Yeah, I'd really like to be present for one of those massive Sid reactions. I think it'd be wonderful to be part of that.
You've never been to Canada, so going to an international incident, kill two birds with one stone.
There you go.
And Paul, can you briefly explain the rules of cricket for an average American using as much wrestling slash maths jargon as possible?
Not briefly, no. But effectively, the standard cricket match would have 11 players on each side. They take it in turn to do what we call batting and fielding. So batting would be like batting in baseball, I guess. You have 10 wickets. You bat it effectively in pairs. So there's only 10 of you could be out because you can't bat on your own at the end. You try and score as many runs as you can. So there are 6 ball overs. If you're playing a test match, this can go on for a very long time. The whole game will last 5 days. A one-day international will last 1 day. And the 2020 match would last maybe three and a half, four hours, depending on the over rate. But you just want to score more runs than the opposition.
While keeping as many wickets as you can.
Yeah, well, it does. I mean, that's then a matter of tactics, Stuart, really. So you could go all out, particularly if you're playing a limited overs match. But I think the thing that people find the most perplexing is that you can have a 5-day game, no results, and still lots of drama. So the first of the test matches that England played against Pakistan in the recent series ended up in a draw, yet one of the most engrossing final hours of a test match.
After 4 boring days.
Yeah, not just 4, but like 4.5 quite dull days of cricket. The kind of final couple of hours are as tense a sport as you can get, but I think...
And then the umpires just ruined it.
Well, not ruined it, they just did their job. It's just circumstance, but it's that because they got kind of called off a bad light, despite having floodlights. Go figure. But, I mean, there's good reasons for that, actually. I've heard the debate. But it's just kind of, you know, the length of time that it takes to build, I think, adds to drama when it's good. Test cricket when it's bad, don't get me wrong, is very, very bad. But test cricket when it's good, I don't think there's anything better.
Is test cricket still your favourite form of the game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a good test match between two closely matched sides is hard to beat.
Maybe this is what we'll do when we finish the main wrestling timeline. We'll do Paul Scriven's History of Cricket.
John Major's done a book on the history of cricket.
Do you think you could do a better job than a former British Prime Minister?
I doubt it. He probably had plenty of time to research it.
And you've not got enough?
Not really.
Eric Choron. Mr. Scriven's, I'm thinking about starting an undergrad math degree, generalised. Aside from classroom stuff, is there any reference online or off that you would recommend?
Not specifically. I tend to think there's lots of good stuff online these days. And, you know, you'll get nuggets from a particular site or particularly contributor. So there's loads of good video stuff. You know, I think people, when you can see them and you can see how they work through it and they can explain it verbally as well as with notation, I think it adds an extra layer of depth. So I'd say when you're covering something, go and have a look on the internet. Go and have a look how different people go about solving a particular problem, because there's more than one way to skin a cat, as Shawn Michaels would tell you.
He says he's in the area of trig right now. We'll be moving on to calculus 1 soon.
It's been a long time since I've done any calculus.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Is that not your specific field of study?
I don't have a... You know, I mean, I only did maths up to A-level, so I didn't really do anything massively fancy up to that. And then I did bits, because I did a chemistry degree, I did bits of maths as part of that. So I did bits in quantum mechanics, but I honest to God couldn't remember any of that right now.
Also, for the three of you, I'm recently new to your podcast and enjoy it, but I've noticed some areas of deep confusion concerning American things. Do y'all not have a pocket American on standby?
No.
What's a pocket American?
It's a little American that goes in your pocket.
Really?
No.
I guess it's a little book of American phrases and things.
Is it an app or something? No, we don't.
No. True story. We rely on our listeners to fill us in on these sorts of...
That's why we're always bloody asking questions about what things are.
Like what's a meadow muffin? Or metal muffin, as I thought.
Or being road hard and put away wet. We learn things ourselves.
But actually, we still got like a few different versions of what that meant.
Yes.
So there were some quite sensible suggestions, but they're kind of slightly different. But it's interesting. No, I like that aspect of the show, kind of seeing things pop up on our feed saying, by the way, did you not know this? It's like, no, I didn't, but that's very interesting. Thank you.
Feel free to contribute, Eric, if you ever know something that we don't, or something specifically American.
He could be our own pocket American.
Would you fit in our pockets?
Yes.
Adam could have a big pocket. He could have Adam's big pocket. Elliot Imes. I'm Alan Partridge. It's just the best. But I feel like one of the only Americans who has seen it. Could you do your best to describe and recommend the show and also give your most cringe-inducing Partridge moment?
Sorry, this is another one for you.
To describe the show, effectively, Alan Partridge started off in hospital radio, but he moved on to doing sports reporting badly. And
or fantastically, depending on which way you look at it.
Yes, it does depend on which way you look at it.
Shit!
He's quite well-meaning, but very self-centred. And tries his best to be good, but I think just gets things heroically wrong all of the time. Cringeworthy moments, punching somebody with a dead turkey on his hand.
So describing the series, it's essentially three main series, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the first one is a spoof chat show, the sort of thing you'd tune into at 7 p.m. on a Friday night on BBC. And it's him interviewing these people that he either doesn't like or doesn't understand or misunderstands what they're there for.
Yeah.
And throughout the series, it's presented that the ratings are declining.
Yeah.
So that leads you on to I'm Alan Partridge, the second two series. The first one, he has been sacked from the BBC. For shooting somebody.
Live on air.
And he's reduced to doing a very early morning show on local radio.
Yeah.
He's divorced. He's living in a travel tavern. It's gold. All of it is gold.
It's one of those things that it doesn't sound a promising beginning, but it very really is.
But then the second series of I'm Alan Partridge is filmed, what, about 5-6 years afterwards?
I don't know if it's quite that long, but there's certainly a sizable gap.
Yeah. And he's gotten a better slot on the local radio station.
Yeah.
And he's now living in a caravan as he builds a house, or as he has a house built for him.
Yeah.
So, as he puts it, he's released his own autobiography as well called Bouncing Back.
And he's also got a girlfriend.
who is an Eastern European called Sonia.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. For anyone who's not seen it, if you haven't had enough references from us throughout, go and watch it.
I mean, it's difficult to kind of perhaps bring a parallel in. The only one that I think might come close, but it's not a very good comparison still, might be The Office.
I knew you were about to say that, but it's very different.
It is very different, but I think the style of humour that this overlaps with that in terms of, you know, the words cringe-inducing here,
yeah,
is kind of the standout phase, and I think The Office is cringe-inducing in
yes,
a similar way.
Yeah.
But very different characters.
That leads us on to our next question from James Musselwhite, who, incidentally, we owe a lot for the Blue Pants intro last episode.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That was excellent.
What is your favourite niche Partridge moment? So I think what he means by that is kind of a little gag or a little expression or moment that's not, you know, laugh out loud, piercing your foot on a spike type thing.
One of my absolute favourites is the TV show that you just mentioned where he's doing the chat show, Know Me, Knowing Q. But before that, there was the radio version, which I think you've heard all of, if
yes,
you're right.
Yes, I have, yeah.
And there's one where he's interviewing this child genius.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets very frustrated with the child genius being cleverer than he is, and he hits him. And and that, for me, is again, cringe, but that is one of the funniest things ever.
See, I've got down probably me next.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's him and he's leading his girlfriend and his PA, who he's consistently mean to. In fact, that's another great niche Partridge moment. If you ever read his autobiography, which is written completely in character,
yeah,
he refers to his assistant, whose name is Lynn and is quite downtrodden in the show, but he never once refers to her by name in the autobiography. She is always just referred to as my assistant. But yeah, it probably me next is mine.
Maybe that bit where Jed gives that Irish guy a tea and an aerator. quite like that.
Or the bit where it's, I'm not driving a Mini Metro, I'm not driving a Mini Metro, I'm not driving a Mini Metro.
All good moments.
Andy Bainbridge has a question for each of us. So firstly, Stuart, facial appliance, Pat Tanaka, Bonnie Tyler or Alan Partridge? Who has the best mask?
Bonnie Tyler, because that's like my favourite entrance gear of all time.
Fair enough. I'll come back to myself later. Paul, what is your favourite prime number?
2.
Why?
Because it's even.
And it's the only prime number that's even, if I'm not wrong.
It is.
For me, Adam, Sonny, Sable, Steph McGovern, snog, marry, avoid.
Ooh.
That's a tricky one.
Well, surely Sable you avoid.
Because Brock Lesnar might kill you. Or do you avoid Sonny for her overwhelming personal problems?
No, you avoid Sable and you snog Sonny and you marry Steph McGovern.
You'd marry Steph McGovern over those two.
Oh, and can I finally have a second series?
No.
Who do you think you are?
Connor Ennis. What are your thoughts about the potential of the Waylon Mercy character? Do you think if it was put on a younger guy, let's just say Jimmy Del Rey for Paul's sake, that it could have had main event promise? God damn you, Savio.
See, I've got down that it's a difficult one, as it was obviously the characterisation that Dan Spivey brought to the role that made it so different.
So if someone else had done it, it might not have been anything good.
Yeah, it might not have had the nuances that kind of he brought to it. I can't think of another performer at the time, with the exception of three names who would potentially have had, sounds odd to say within the context of wrestling, but like the dramatic range or subtlety of character to do it.
Mm.
Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
Steve Austin. Mick Foley.
Mm. And I'm not sure that they would have fit that character. They're all great.
Yeah, and this is my point. That I don't know as if they would have done things in the way that made that Waylon Mercy character great, or whether they would have just done the things that made their own characters great.
Yeah.
But the thought of Steve Austin in white trousers and Hawaiian shirt sounds amazing. I'll watch that all day. David Gray. Who would you like to see Undertaker fight at Mania 32? Fantasy and or realistically?
I don't know whether I want to see him like have another match. Well, I don't know. Isn't he done?
Yeah, but it's Mania 32 in his home state.
So he's got to, really. I'm not sure. Fantasy?
Not your fantasies.
Oh, yeah. Hang on.
I think it's a tough one. I think coming up with new, credible, tough opponents for The Undertaker isn't as easy as it first sounds. Because I'm drawing an absolute blank on people who think he would have a good match that we've not already seen.
So this is the problem, like you say. It's characters that you could believably put in a WrestleMania match with The Undertaker that would seem a credible threat is hard. But as two people I'd quite like to see him face, and having him against some younger guys that could potentially carry that side of the match, two names I've got are Kevin Owens.
Yeah, well, I could, yeah.
And Rusev. Because at least Rusev sort of still has a bit of credibility as a tough guy. And I think Taker would quite enjoy putting together a physical match with someone like Rusev.
Yeah.
And realistically, I fear we're going to get him versus Kane.
Kane?
Yes.
How would that come about?
Well, they've both been taken away, haven't they, by the Whites? Has there been any progression?
I believe they made it back this week.
So they've just been for a coffee or something with them?
Yeah. They went for a coffee with the Whites.
So Starbucks.
Yeah.
The Wyatts have Starbucks.
How would that happen? Kane would just turn on him for the 300th time.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'd want to see that particularly.
I'm not sure anyone would. And I'm a big fan of Kane. I'm a big fan of The Undertaker, but yeah, we have seen that once or twice before.
Mm. And which of the NXT prospects or recent main roster additions do you think or hope will have the biggest impact over the coming years? Also, who from the mid-card should be in the main event scene?
I don't know a lot about it, but I'd probably would say Owens. You know, mentioned him a couple of times already tonight, but probably got the best chance of making it long term.
Cesaro has definitely got the skills and the talent to make it in the main event, I think.
And the size.
Yeah. Is he just too foreign, though?
He's too foreign.
He knows five languages.
I've got Tyler Breeze. I'd like to see Tyler Breeze have a meaningful main roster role for a long time, as I think he's proven in NXT that he's very good at the sort of title challenger / slightly below main event role.
Yeah.
Yet he managed, and this is obviously due to the booking of NXT, he always seemed credible despite losing quite a lot.
Yeah. Always a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and really, really well developed character.
Yes. So I'd like to see him. And if you watch the most recent episode of Breaking Ground as well, there's quite a lot on him on the most recent episode, talking about how he was sort of on the verge of being released and coming up with the Tyler Breeze character sort of saved his career there. And he sort of put his all into that. And it's nice to see him get a bit of success. But yeah, he certainly meant a lot in NXT, and I'd like to see him mean a lot on the main roster.
It's a worrying that he might follow the similar sort of pathway that lots of the NXT guys seem to go down when they transcend up to Raw, which is a real shame. And a name that I'd pull out of that is Neville.
Yeah.
Because why is Neville languishing in such a position at the minute when the guy is absolutely amazing?
Yeah, I think for me,
maybe he's not going to be main event, but he should certainly be doing more than what he's doing.
Yeah, he should be presented as more of a special attraction. So harking back to the initial presentation of Rey Mysterio in 1996 in WCW,
yeah,
he was presented as a big deal. And, you know, he's not on television every week like Neville is, but when he has a match, it's an event, and they put him in kind of these dream match type scenarios. And, you know, you have the series with Malenko. If you could find someone for Neville to do that with, rather than, yeah, coming up from NXT and just trading wins and losses with Barrett and people like that, it's
His presentation, well, I'm not sure about the cape.
I like capes. I'm a big fan of capes.
I'm not sure about the cape on him.
Okay.
Do you like Jeff capes?
Yes, love him.
English strongman?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the drum and bass music either.
I can live with that. Is it drum and bass?
I don't know. Is it rave? I'm not really good on my dance sort of music.
More good at your Britney Spears, like we had in the car over her.
Yes.
My, 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 Jimmy Hart. Hulk Hogan, 6 days in county to the showdown in the Motor City. Man versus man, machine versus machine, you and the giant.
Well, you know something, Mean Gene? I know it's the 11th hour, brother, and a lot of people around the world, around the WCW, think that Hulk Hogan is boxed in, brother. You got Kevin Sullivan, you got the master creeping up behind me, and even the Yeti as an insurance policy, brother. But even though I walk through the valley of the Dungeon of Doom, brother, I fear no evil, dude, because the only thing to fear is evil itself, brother. And even though I walk through that dark valley, there's only one set of footprints, brother. I don't fear no man, because on my back, I carry all those little Hulkamaniacs that believe in the prayers, the training, and the vitamins, brother. Whoa, Mean Gene. You know, my concerns this week have been a lot of things. About what to do with the black gloves, the black bandana, about what to do with the giant's carcass. Well, number one, after Detroit, brother, after everybody sees what I do with this nasty giant, I just might hang on to the black gloves, brother, because everybody knows what a man with a pair of black gloves on and a black rag on his head is capable of doing, dude. That's why in the Motor City, I'm not gonna lick my wounds anymore. That's why in the Motor City, I called my main man, Tony Carlini, at the California Connection, because I'm gonna get me a big, bad Harley. And after I bust that giant up, I'm gonna drag him around until he disintegrates, because ashes to ashes, dust to dust, once I drag that giant around my bike in the Hulkster, they'll still trust.
You know, you got a lot of guys kind of bailing out here at the 11th hour. Can I mention the names of Sting, of the Macho Man Randy Savage, Lex Luger?
Oh, my so-called friends, brother. Yeah. The Sting, the Macho Man, and Lex Luger. Look at the Stinger. He's got the Hulkster's red and yellow on. He's growing a Fu Manchu, just like Kevin Sullivan, man. Sting, Luger, Macho Man, as you're hovering my carcass while I was injured, just waiting to pick my bones, brother. You better all get in line, you little dogs. Better get on the porch and decide who's got the biggest bark, brother, because the big dog right here, the bad guy, Hulk Hogan, is going to be waiting on you, brother. So when you decide who's man enough, come on down, and I'll beat Sting, I'll beat Luger, and I'll beat the Macho Man one at a time. In Detroit, brother, it's machine versus machine, and then me and the giant will go to war. And what you going to do when the man in black destroys you?
How about that, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, yeah! Titanium indeed! Hulk Hogan, ready for Halloween Havoc, and his battle with a giant. Eric, let's get back to you.
Ashley James Clements. It's a game of snog, marry, and avoid, but with a twist. Same concept, but it's recommend, repeat, and delete. So which pay-per-view of the podcast would you recommend someone to watch? Which one would you watch repeatedly without fail, and which one would you delete off the network so that no one will ever have to watch it ever again?
Okay, so I've got down one to recommend, Survivor Series 95.
Yeah.
As I think that was the beginning of a
point.
Better run of stuff, and there's some interesting stuff on there. You've got the nice underdogs match at the start. You've got the women's match, which, while perhaps not being the best women's match we've seen, you know, showed enough to make you want to see more of them. And then you've got the wild card match with all the sort of upper mid carders, and you've got Brett Diesel in the main event. So certainly one that if people haven't seen, I would say check it out. One to watch over and over. Do you want to take a guess?
Well, you're going to say Survivor Series 96.
Yeah.
But I would say WrestleMania 10.
Well, let me finish mine first. Probably me next.
Probably you next. Who do you think you are?
And want to delete In Your House 4. because it was dull as dishwater.
Not King of the Ring 95?
Well, see, at least that has some curiosity value, whereas In Your House 4 is just dull.
It's not bad enough to be noticeably awful.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just boring.
Yeah, it's just boring. So you've got Yokozuna, Mabel, you've got that Razor-Dean Douglas match where after they had quite a decent one at In Your House 3, the In Your House 4 one is just balls. And then you've got the Bulldog-Diesel match where Bulldog just lays on his legs for 17 minutes. Mm.
Classic.
Yeah, exactly. So they're my three.
I'd fairly concur with that, because we know what my memory's like.
Connor Ennis, have you ever taped over The Spy Who Loved Me with America's Strongest Man?
No.
No, I haven't, but I have spilt loads of Sunny Delight on it.
I got you The Spy Who Loved Me on Blu-ray, didn't I, as part of your...
You did.
Present. Have you watched that yet?
No, I haven't, no.
You really should do it in very high resolution.
Yeah.
Mm. Ashley James Clements again. That's some poor planning. They're quite close together. Apologies, folks. You're all hosting a wrestling special of Come Dine With Me with four people from the wrestling world, but you can only have one of the following to dinner. A male superstar, past or present, a female superstar, past or present, a wrestling manager, and a commentator. Who would you choose?
Ooh.
Do you want me to do mine first?
Go for it.
Steve Austin, Alundra Blaze, Paul Heyman, and Jim Ross, so we could talk about the Dangerous Alliance in WCW in 1992.
It's a tricky one. I'd probably go for Bull Nakano. I think that's my easiest pick.
You're aware she can't speak English, right?
Imagining she could. Or charading it up. It'd be fine. Quite good at charades. I really like the kid from the Click documentary.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be somebody a bit different. But actually, I think, you know, he'd have loads of cool stuff to talk about. So I think he'd be a good choice. Manager, if we can have anybody, Paul Bearer. And that's leaving me with a commentator. It would probably be JR, yes. No, sorry, Vince. Vince. I'm having Vince as my commentator.
Okay. Probably Adam next.
Male superstar, maybe Taka Michinoku, because I know I could pretend I was like having dinner with Paul. That'd be nice.
Just invite me over anyway.
I was going to say, you can do that in real life every now and again.
Manager, Sonny.
Ooh, well done.
Thank you. And female superstar.
Sable for some cracking conversation.
Oh, Jesus, no. Nikki Bella, because she'd be good for a laugh.
The Total Divas one, the sexy gremlin.
Rosa Mendes.
Rosa Mendes.
I'm not having the gremlin round.
You need a commentator as well. You could have Macho Man Randy Savage, because he was a commentator on Raw.
And on some of our early pay-per-views.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have CM Punk, he was a commentator on NXT.
You could. Who's your choice?
Or Regal, yeah.
Yeah, William Regal. I imagine that'd be good. Terrence Patrick. If you could only watch three TV programmes for the rest of your life, what would you pick and why?
Alan Partridge, because during my A-levels I had I'm Alan Partridge, the six episodes of the series, on two separate VHSs.
Yeah.
And I would watch the first three one night, and then the next night I'd watch the next three, and then I'd go back, and literally for about a year and a half, I alternated between those two. Like, the resolution by the end of it was
terrible.
Terrible. So that would be one of them, just because I think you need some comedy to kind of pick you up. This might look silly now. Sometimes when you go back and watch something, they can look quite dated, but Buffy, in terms of personally, takes me to, you know, a nice place.
Right.
Kind of... In my life. That's a better way of putting it, Stuart. Thank you. Third one, any TV shows? Probably something that if it was allowed to keep running, so that there was always current on, I think it'd be nice to have something to keep you kind of in touch with reality. I'm not saying reality TV, but I actually really like The Apprentice. So again, it's just on at the minute, so probably missing it now. But I think, you know, that would actually just keep you in... kind of in touch, let's say, with normality. It's not normality, but...
The Apprentice would keep you in touch with normality.
Well, not normality, but you get that sense of this is what the world is like, where my other shows, this is what the world was like, say, in the 1990s, where at least that would be happening in current day. That's the difference.
You could just pick the news.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't really watch the news very much.
So you use The Apprentice as a gauge...
window on the world.
documentary
window into a boardroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam?
I'll probably have the news. Because for the rest of your life, I want something that's going to keep on being made every day. I want fresh content.
Right.
Now, although the BBC only seems to have like three stories, one of them being how everyone's going to get Alzheimer's. But I'd like some fresh content coming.
But you'd
through.
Never find out how the PM fucked a dead pig because they didn't cover that.
There's no programme that really did cover that, is there?
Where's Charlie Brooker when you need him?
Well, yeah. Probably Game of Thrones at the minute. I do like that, and that keep me up with my, you know, quota of beheadings and nudity. And then something quite relaxing. Maybe
Red Shoe Diaries.
Maybe Planet Earth, that cracking documentary on the natural world.
Well, I feel like you've given better answers than me, because I've just got three comedies.
What are they?
I'm Alan Partridge, because, yeah, I've probably not watched it as much as Paul. Hmm. I've not worn out a VHS or anything, but you know, I've watched it many times.
I will point out, I didn't get out a lot, and I lived in a very isolated area.
I've got Game On, which is something I don't think we've mentioned.
Not a lot, but it is great.
But we're all big fans of that, and it's got quite a lot of sentimental and, like Paul says, takes you to a place in your life.
Nostalgic qualities.
Yeah, yeah. And a comedy that I've probably seen the whole run of it, maybe three or four times, and it's about 9 seasons, the US version of The Office.
You do love that.
I'm not a fan of the UK one, but the US one I absolutely adore. And I quite love Pam. So there you go.
I think comedy has got a strange place in keeping you sane.
Yeah.
I think comedy is good for the soul. Dwayne Adams, mathematically speaking, from how great a height does NXT pee all over Raw and SmackDown? Okay, more serious question. It's 1996 and you are Vince McMahon. Woohoo. With flagging ratings, you've somehow got the drop on WCW and can pinch 3 of their stars to boost the ailing Raw. Which 3 guys do you bring in to give the company a kick up the backside? But I said you were Vince McMahon, so what stupid gimmick do you give them?
I hire Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and make them fake Deezer and fake Razor.
I'd probably Gray, Psycho. So some of those guys, just so they can put on that calibre of matches. Because like we've said before, the main event scene in 1996 is pretty good. It's that undercard that they're struggling to
fill out the show.
Keep interesting. So I think if you pick 3 of those guys that are going to really fill up that mid card, that could also kind of push into the main event scene from time to time, but not necessarily stay there. I think there'd be.
So which 3 would you pick?
Definitely pick Ray. Ultimo Dragon. I was impressed by him. I'm kind of tempted to say Dean Malenko, but I could only really see Dean at that point necessarily working with those other guys from WCW, whereas I can imagine Ray having matches with
the others
other people.
In the WWF.
Juventud Guerrero.
I'd bring in Ray and give him the Crash Holly gimmick, weighing allegedly £400. I'd bring in Scott Steiner and make him some kind of wrestling community support officer. And then I'd bring in Hulk Hogan and bring him in as the Hookster. There you go.
Give him a Zimmer frame. Happy days.
Yep.
Martin Summers. Have you got any famous listeners?
Over to you.
James Martin, celebrity chef.
David Gray.
Richard Query.
Richard Query. As mentioned earlier, I believe both Mike Quackenbush and Bryce Remsburg are listeners. Not sure if they still are, but they have at one or another point listened. Oh. That thanks to Tom Canning, obviously.
Yes, thank you, Tom Canning.
And I'm not sure if it's a listener, but Tatanka's retweeted us.
Sami Zayn followed us for a while on Twitter and then stopped.
Adam Rose
followed us for a while on Twitter and then stopped. So you never know if they actually heard anything.
What is it with these guys? why do they follow and then stop?
I don't know. It broke my heart, particularly Sami Zayn.
Ashley James Clemens.
He asked a lot.
He did ask a lot. You've already discussed which premiership managers would make good wrestling managers. I want to know which wrestling managers would make great football managers. Ooh, exciting stuff.
So quite honestly, I don't know who Chelsea could get to replace Jose Mourinho.
Sonny Ono.
So why not go with Paul Heyman?
Yeah.
And if Swansea dump Gary Monk, then get James E. Cornett. Cornett as a mid-table Premier League manager, calling out all the super rich clubs. Golden.
Yeah.
Who's in the financial doldrums? You get Ted DiBiase in to bankroll it.
Leeds United.
Yeah, there you go.
No, that's a very good question. Very good question. And, of course, Leicester are kind of flying ever higher at the minute.
We've got some Leicester questions later on.
Have we? Okay.
Yeah.
James Lawson. How much wrestling outside of WWF / WWE and WCW have you seen? Japan, Mexico, Calgary, early territories. Me, not a lot.
Me, not a great deal, apart from the obvious stuff that we've mentioned from, you know, the current scene.
A couple of bits and bobs.
The bit that I'd like to see, or one of the things I'd really like to see, is some Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, actually, I was, oddly enough, watching some of their TV on YouTube a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. I think you came in while Ricky Morton was on the screen.
Yes, splendid.
Yeah, I've seen some. I don't know what to say. I've not seen all or anywhere near all. But yeah, I've got some different bits and bobs. I've got a lot of the Delta ECW DVDs.
The
original presentations of those.
Yeah, you managed to pick those up at a bizarre...
In a bizarre location for less than they were worth, so that was good. What else have I seen? I've, over the last year or so, I've been watching quite a lot of Japanese women's wrestling based upon our love of Bull Nakano and sort of that late 95 scene where they brought all those women in. So I've been watching quite a lot of that over the last year.
I've seen odd bits and bobs of that, and it's fucking brutal.
Yes, it's very good. Territories, I've got the Mid-South set, so I watched that. That was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I've seen some British stuff. Very little. I've got a few sort of sets of people in Japan. So I've got some sets of like the British Bulldogs in Japan. I've got a Jericho one. I've got an Eddie Guerrero and Art Bar one, a Bruiser Brody one. So I've seen some of that. I've got some male Japanese stuff as well. Not a lot of Mexican stuff, if I'm honest. The obvious calling points, like when worlds collide. I didn't watch the recent Triple Mania that everyone rated as a terrible show. So I didn't watch it.
Oh, is that the one that had all those technical...
false
problem. So well, you showed me something, bits of that. Was that, what did you show me with that on? You showed me some
there were loads of audio problems and stuff. Yeah. So I've not watched that, but obviously it's mostly kind of WWE in that that's what we've been brought up with and that's what's the easiest to watch.
Yeah. Accessibility is
But yeah, I've ventured into some other locales over the years, shall we say. Lee Carlos Cunningham. Now that you're going to see WrestleMania, what matches would you like to see? Adam, I guess that's fielded at you and I, less so Paul, sorry.
Yeah, I don't really know at this juncture where things are going to go with it, but from the people that they've got in the company...
Whose knees are in working order.
Yeah. Well, who do you think Owens would be in line for facing?
See, if I could choose a match to see at WrestleMania as two guys I really like, and it'd be nice to see him on that stage, it'd be nice to see Zayn Owens in a match against each other at WrestleMania.
That would be really
good. Think that would mean quite a lot to them as well. It would be nice to see Balor on the main roster by then and doing something meaningful, but in all honesty, those three guys, if they're around on the main roster at that time, will probably all be in some sort of like multi-man ladder match or something.
It'd be nice if they could have those NXT women that they've brought up to the main roster have some sort of like half-decent match, but what are the odds on that actually being allowed? Will they get even 10 minutes to do something pretty decent, or is it just going to get... What are the Divas matches that happen at WrestleManias? They're normally...
clusterfucks.
Yeah, just a big multi-person mess won by God knows who.
Rosa Mendes.
What's actually penciled in at the time being? Is there anything...
Well, I think it's all gone to pot since Rollins' knee injury last week.
That must have really...
caused severe rewrite of the entire show, I think.
So we're going to see a title defence by Reigns?
I would think so.
As the most likely thing that's going to happen. Who's going to face him? What's Lesnar going to be doing?
Well, that's the thing I think, you know, we'd probably most be looking forward to seeing is seeing Brock Lesnar live, because I've never seen Brock Lesnar live.
Yeah, that would be a big moment for me, I think.
So if you could pick one person to see him against at WrestleMania, who would you like to see him face?
Lesnar?
Spike Dudley.
You and Spike Dudley.
I'd love to see Brock Lesnar throw Spike Dudley around.
It depends. As far as, if I just want to see him demolish someone who's going to take a beating like no one else, like Dolph Ziggler versus Brock Lesnar would be amazing. To have a more competitive match, maybe, someone with a good amount of wrestling ability, Cesaro versus Lesnar, would that be...
That'd
be pretty good, right? Are we going to have a Cena match?
I wouldn't be surprised if we get Undertaker Cena, which is a very big match that they've avoided for a very long time.
That would be a logical place to go. Who will the Wyatts be abducting at WrestleMania? Maybe maybe Rosa Mendez.
She's pregnant.
What?
Yeah, not with Gary the Barn Owl either.
What?
Some other poor sap that didn't run away after the first date.
So, yeah, her first date routine worked on someone.
Evidently.
I've had an alcohol problem, I want everything.
So lie. Someone's up for that.
Someone's actually gone for
it. It's not you.
That we know of.
It's definitely not me.
Adam's taking a short break from the podcast.
Also, how much wrestling do you watch these days, current and retro?
Personally, I watch, as current wrestling, NXT when you're watching it, because you generally control the WWE network in the house. Retro, well,
a pay-per-view every 2 weeks.
But basically, yeah, all these 90s things that we watch. And you very nicely, you always seem to buy the PWG events as they come out, certainly the big ones, and you're normally good enough to watch those when I'm present. So I normally keep up to date with their big events. Watch quite a lot of Lucha Underground as well.
I mostly just watch what we need to watch for the shows, if I'm honest, and I get very little time to do anything else. But
as we found out,
that really was our Empire Strikes Back ending, wasn't it?
God, yeah.
Is that a good thing?
No.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean you've never seen Star Wars?
I haven't seen Star Wars. I do occasionally get around to watch a show. So like, I watched about half of WrestleMania last year.
Then you went home.
Yeah, before it got good. And I watched the occasional, if I do happen to get a little bit of time, I might stick the network on and watch the odd isolated match, but not a whole show.
Yeah, I've got down. Watching retro stuff takes up a lot of my time these days, particularly since Nitro went to 2 hours and we increased the frequency of covering WCW pay-per-views. So now I kind of feel like I have to keep up to date without missing anything, because such a lot of stuff happens in WCW that it's hard to keep track of what's going on. So you can't say, oh, no, I'll just watch the last 3 weeks before the pay-per-view and do that. You kind of have to watch everything that happens in between whatever the last one we did was and whatever the next one we do is. So, yeah, I would say I watch more retro stuff than I do modern stuff, and I will watch all the Raws and the Superstars and stuff that I have to for the WWF stuff. As mentioned earlier, I make sure to catch NXT weekly, and I quite like watching the C&D shows, like I said. And, yeah, just random indie stuff, whatever's kind of getting a good buzz, Rev Pro I go to, so I see that.
All right, standing by right now, it is home of Venice Beach, California. The man has gone back to his roots. Let's check in right now with none other than Hulk Hogan.
Hogan's back and it is meeting on the dark side. If you step into his world, you may not leave alive.
You know something, brothers? Now we're back in Venice Beach. Now we've replaced Jimmy Hart with the head of the War Games from Venice Beach, our main man, brother. We're afraid they might not show up. We're afraid we may destroy them all. And now that the Macho Man, brother,
what?
Has came into the dark side, dude, now that he realizes that the training, the prayers, the vitamins, and the commandments are the most important thing, brother. Stick with me all the way, Macho Man, in our hit list, brother. A Sullivan, Jimmy Hart, Luger, that stinky, nasty, warden-fested giant. And everybody will fall by the wayside, dude. Stick with me in the dark side, brother.
Forever and ever, yeah. Walking the streets just like the brother told us just a little while ago from the dark side. But, Hulk's... How much more do you need to sacrifice? Sullivan took your mustache. Jimmy Hart ripped you between the seams with the red and yellow. The giant took the world belt. And Lex Luger put you in the rack. Don't you understand what he's been saying?
You
told us that. Now, what needs to be done is this. Divide and conquer. You're too emotionally involved with the situation. You take the low road. I'll take the high road. Yeah. You stay
now
here on the dark side with the brother,
you're
just
talking.
Like he told you before.
Yeah, right.
And I'll go to the light side, WCW Nitro, and I'll find out who's friend and foe. And then I'll let you know. Do you see where I'm coming from, brother?
After you find out who's friend and foe in the light, brother.
Again.
Friend and foe, me and the brother, the head
you
of war
that?
Crimes, we'll stay
you're
on the dark
it.
Side. We'll stay here, brother, and we'll take care of business, dude. And now that I get the stench
of
Venice Beach back in my blood, brother,
you wanna say that
what
again
you
right
gonna
now?
Do
all
when
right.
the dark side of Hulkamania destroys
you? Ooh, yeah.
Leon Cannon. I'd like to hear you guys talk about PWG and their most recent Battle of Los Angeles tournament. For my money, it's the best wrestling on the planet, and the more words said about it, the better. It's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Oh, I've only seen the trailer for it, and it looked amazing.
Yeah, those trailers they produce really are cracking and really do make you want to watch those shows. Yeah, I've got down that Bola this year, Night 2, is probably my show of the year, but I'd need to watch a couple of the NXT specials again just to kind of make a final decision. But Night 1 was okay. Bit too samey in places, if I'm honest. But Night 2 was absolutely off the charts good.
Did that have that Lucha match in it?
Yes, it had the Pentagon and Drago against Aerostar and Phoenix match.
That was great. And one thing I think that definitely elevates up the PWG stuff is the commentary. It's
hilarious.
It's so good.
I want Chuck Taylor to commentate on everything I watch.
It's really, really well informed, and it feels like they're kind of having a laugh.
Yeah.
But they're not taking the piss. It's just really, really funny. It's so different from the very contrived commentary that we get on the majority of the WWE stuff.
So you watched the majority of this tournament with me, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, name some matches that kind of stood out to you over the course of that weekend.
Oh, who did Brian Cage kill but then lose to?
Jack Evans.
Jack Evans. That was amazing.
Jack Evans' shit-talking routine throughout the entire weekend was brilliant.
Jack Evans playing a complete dickhead.
We've been big fans of Jack Evans for a very long time.
Absolutely fantastic.
And you know this?
Yes, I do.
Marty Scurll against...
Who I'm, again, a big fan of.
Was he against Sabre?
In the semi-final where they do the World of Sports style stuff.
Yeah, that World of Sports style match was brilliant. And it's because it's so unusual to see in, you know, with the current sort of wrestling that we get televised. It just looked like a very different match, but it was brilliant, and the crowd were all really into it, because I guess it was something quite different for them. Also, a comment from the crowd of, fuck your man bun, I thought was quite genius.
Also, who was it that, or someone shouted, Marty Scurll sucks, and he sort of turned around and went, it was one time at uni, okay? And then the crowd started a chant of, he was curious, which was brilliant. So, just a fantastic tournament. So you've got that Lucha tag on the second night, which is absolutely top draw. Ricochet versus Zack Sabre Jr. was everything I wanted it to be.
Absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant. You had a guerrilla warfare, like no DQ main event on the second night as well, with Andrew Everett, Trevor Lee and Biff Busick against the Young Bucks and Super Dragon.
Yeah, that was really good.
Which is brutal.
Yeah, nasty looking match.
What sort of stuff goes down in that?
Double stomps through chairs with thumbtacks on them.
Okay.
Sounds
the
right.
Chairs with thumbtacks?
The chairs have got thumbtacks on them, then someone's head, then like a curb stomp.
Yeah, Mrs. Scrivens might like that one.
Yeah.
So that was absolutely fantastic. I thought Chris Hero the entire weekend was really good as well.
Yeah, still, if I've not mentioned it before, still owner of the greatest wrestling punches, I think, currently anywhere. He just looks like he's knocking people's teeth out all the time.
Plus, he's sort of, you know, the speculation is obviously he was released from WWE because of his physique and stuff, but he's developed this aura around him of sort of this big, nasty ass kicker.
Big guy.
And I'll be honest, I was never a Chris Hero fan for a very, very long time, and it took a lot for him to kind of win me over. And,
yeah, he's really fucking good.
Yeah.
Who is Thatcher?
Timothy Thatcher, yeah.
Timothy Thatcher. It's the first time I've seen him, and like intensity from a performer is just quite incredible. I'd be really interested in seeing more of his stuff.
Yeah, and on the third night, you had Zack Sabre Jr. versus Pentagon Jr., which is one of those matches. Like, they are two guys that I've enjoyed very much this year. Like, Sabre had a really good match with Roderick Strong, a really good match with Chris Hero, and Pentagon had been doing all of his awesome stuff on Lucha Underground. But you never quite put the two together in your head. And then you see that on the card, and you're like, holy fuck, I need to see that. And it was awesome. And it was like
really good, yeah.
Yeah, like wacky Spanish Mexican lucha submissions against wacky English submissions. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was kind of conflicting but very matching style.
Yeah,
it was
very,
very strange but very, very entertaining.
I know exactly what you mean. And yeah, you had the Brian Cage, Jack Evans stuff where Brian Cage just murders him for the entire match.
Yeah, it's brilliant. As far as a destruction of someone, it's right up there with when Lesnar kicked Cena's ass.
Yeah, and then kind of between the rounds on the third night, because it was quite a long show the third night, if there was one criticism of the entire thing, the third show was like 5 hours long, but one of the discs is the entire second round, and then the second disc is the semis, main, and a couple of like multi-man tags. We actually watched one of the multi-man tags with a friend of ours who's not a wrestling fan at all and hates seeing it, and she was hugely entertained by the whole thumb up the bum and
the slow-mo thing. Yeah, the longest slow-mo section of a match that I've ever seen. Have you ever seen any of that, Paul?
Yeah.
But it just goes on forever. And what makes it, and what makes these shows so special, and I've mentioned the commentary, but the crowd interaction with everything.
So they start doing all their chants in slow motion.
Mm.
And the commentary is all done in slow motion. And it just goes on for about 5 minutes. But, it just seems to go, but it gets funnier and funnier the more it goes on.
But then it builds to a spot where it's Mark Andrews and someone else who I can't remember get up to the top rope, and they just sort of look at the crowd and go, I can't do this in slow motion, because they're about to do some sort of flip off the top rope. But there's also, is it a sort of just a massive sequence of kicking each other in the dick?
Yes. it's always a
super dick party.
Kick to the dick on all the commentary. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, so that's really good. Yeah, if you've got the ability to go out and purchase these shows, I would say certainly night two, but, you know, get the whole tournament. And it's this wonderful mishmash of the sort of regular PWG guys. Then you've got a whole bunch of English guys over there, or European. Yeah. So you've got Tommy End, Zack Sabre, Marty Scurll, Will Ospreay,
Andrews,
who is amazing, Mark Andrews. Then you've got the Lucha guys in there. Then you've got your Heroes, your Thatchers, your Drew Gulaks, your Biff Busicks. Yeah, just a fantastic tournament. Lots of really interesting matches. And Helico is another one that we've not mentioned, who fantastic in Lucha Underground and has had a couple of outings there now as well. And him and Jack Evans had a match against each other, which kicks off Jack Evans' whole shit talking routine. But yeah, features one of the best sort of big knee spots I think I've ever seen.
Yeah,
go out
good,
and
good
buy
show.
It.
Really good show.
I hope that's enough words for Leon. That was many words. I think.
Yes, that was many words.
Billy Johnson, who's the better wrestler, Pentagon Jr. or Jack Sabre Jr.?
Zach.
Well, I don't know, but I'll go with you. And what was your favourite match of the year so far?
Who's the better wrestler? That's a hard one. But watch their match against each other. Decide for yourself.
Yeah. Well, who wins?
Well, I don't want to spoil it for people. Who would you rather see? That's a weird one, because I've seen Zack Sabre before. So I think if you were to say you could see one of these people live now, I'd probably pick Pentagon, because I've not seen him. But we're seeing Zack Sabre Jr., AJ Styles at RevPro in January, and I'm super excited about that.
I've not seen either of them, but I've seen them both wrestle on TV, and I couldn't pick which one I think would be better. I would say different styles, but equally as amazing.
And you've seen neither, so. No. Although you've seen Pentagon, that match with Vampiro, and you very much enjoyed that.
And I've seen little highlights of Jack Sabre Jr.
Why do you keep calling him Jack?
Because I think that's what Zach should be called.
So, matches of the year so far. Lesnar versus Reigns.
The WrestleMania
with the cash in.
Yes.
Yes, that was amazing.
Because it's 15 minutes of Brock Lesnar being Brock Lesnar, and it spawned that awesome Suplex City song. Not the WWE version, the one they deleted off YouTube.
Yeah,
the really
that was
good
great,
version.
Yeah.
And then the cash in, which is one of those great moments that when wrestling gets things right, and you know, even though he's a heel and stuff, it was the moment everyone in the crowd wanted to see. And they gave it to them, and people were happy with that moment. So that was really cool. Lesnar versus Cena versus Rollins at the Royal Rumble. Very good.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
The women's four-way from NXT TakeOver Rival.
Amazing.
See, again, I think at some point towards the end of this year, if I've got the time, I'm going to have to kind of sit down and watch these, you know, if not the entire specials, but certainly those women's matches in a row and sort of pick out sort of a favourite one, because I know people were very high on the Sasha Becky match, and I wasn't so much on that myself.
The
multi
man one, I think I remember being better.
Yeah, I think that was my favourite, but I'd kind of have to watch that next to the Bayley matches as well.
When was Owens Zayn?
Yeah, both of those are this year.
The one where Owens wins
the title,
was great, because it just seemed like a really unexpected way of finishing it.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like he was going to get the title, but he very rightly did. And it was an interesting way of ending the match. It's just great stuff.
Tadig Fraser, apologise if I've not pronounced your name correctly there. Given what you've seen so far over the podcast in both WWF and WCW, and with what you've seen of the product later, do you think a promotion runs better and is more successful with a babyface on top, like Cena or Hogan, or a heel, i.e. Triple H in 2000/NWO? So which do you prefer to watch?
Well, I think it's all about getting the ratio right, because when you get, like you talk about the feel-good moment with the cash-in, you need those moments to mean something. And so I think predominantly you do want more heel on top, but it's got to be interspersed. It probably needs to be in a ratio of something like 3-1 heel to face.
Okay.
I'd say kind of, because you do want those occasional, yes, what we wanted to happen is happening, but you don't want it to last forever because it just takes away the specialness.
Yeah. See, I think it depends on kind of the character of the babyface. So the two he mentions there, Cena and Hogan, are not characters that chase titles, I don't think.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's just because of how they're presented in terms of their dominance. But say someone like Sami Zayn's title win and reign was better for losing it very quickly to Owens, because there was a better story to be told there in terms of him chasing back that title from Owens. Mm. Even though everyone had wanted him to see him win that title from Neville last December, had he not gotten injured, you would have seen, I think, a very good story of him eventually getting his revenge against Owens. So I think it very much depends on the character, whether it's a very dominant sort of Hulk Hogan, John Cena type character, or whether it's an underdog type babyface, maybe like a Brett that you're going with, that perhaps works better from underneath as sort of chasing the title.
I think I agree probably with what Paul said, in that I quite like to have the thing is better to have heels being on top. So basically your villain is on top, and therefore it's a triumph when the good guy finally topples over that villain. I think it works, or certainly is not my style of liking things, when you've got a face sitting on top of the title for ages and constant heels failing, because then, you know, where's the real threat, and treat it more like a movie.
Yeah.
You know, you want to see overwhelming odds to be defeated by
the hero.
But yeah, the hero obviously has to win. The face has to win at some points, but I don't think prolonged slots on top for me work that well. Alan Young, do you think Jamie Vardy will join Real Madrid? I hope not. It will ruin my fantasy football team.
I doubt it.
Real Madrid?
Yeah, I doubt it. Yeah, I think that one's pure speculation. I think what they've got to do now is work very hard to make sure he stays the rest of the season, that no one's coming in January and swooping him away.
They'll try, though, won't they?
They'll put $15 million on his head?
They've asked for $20 million, which for a 29-year-old is a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a price tag they're putting on his head to put other people off buying him. But, I mean, feasibly, if it gets to January, and, okay, we've got a tough run in December of games, late November, December. But, theoretically, if we're still in, like, 5th, 6th by January, well, hopefully you bung him enough money to say, no, stay with us. Yeah. We can play Europe next season. Okay, maybe the Europa League, which you don't want to play in, but yeah, it's an interesting one, and it's certainly not a set of circumstances that I think any of us could have foreseen before the start of the season.
No.
Leicester City, third in the Premiership.
1 point off the top.
1 point off the top, late November.
Weird times. Where were they this time last year?
Not that bad. They had a reasonable start, but it was starting to go downhill.
But the decline had started by now, yeah.
Yes, it depends on Vardy, really, doesn't it? Because he's kind of the top person.
Yeah.
In Leicester, if he moves to a Liverpool or to a Man City or wherever,
yeah,
he's putting the offer in, he's going to be one of a number of people at the... He's not even going to come into the top. He's going to be Marty Jannetty.
When right now he's Shawn Michaels.
Exactly.
Chat shit, get banged, mate.
Simon Humphries, which would be more intimidating for each individual one of you? Bowling an innings against the England cricket team, or a 30-minute Ironman match with Bull Nakano?
Well, given England's performance today, not very intimidating at all.
No, I'd quite like to have a bowl against the England team. Not as in say I think I'd do particularly well, because I don't think I would, but I think I'd enjoy the challenge.
Yeah, I'm awful at bowling, but if I bowl a load of overs at the England cricket team, I'm probably not going to get hurt, but having a match with Bull Nakano
You probably would.
I probably would.
She's going to grab you by your hair and swing you across the ring.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen.
And then leg drop you from the top rope.
Yeah, so probably bowling. I'd opt for the bowl.
Yeah, I'm going to opt for the bowl as well.
Yeah, I really would quite like to have a good bowl against some of the England players.
Chris Palmer, what other non-wrestling podcasts do you guys listen to?
I did do Dusted for a bit, the Buffy podcast, but not in a long time.
I've listened to the Dusted one. I quite like it. And Film Sack, I'm quite a big fan of.
What's that?
It's a podcast basically where they watch a film and then they just sit around and review what it's all about. It's quite funny, it's quite entertaining, it's quite informative.
Any particular episodes you'd recommend?
Which one did I really like? I listened to Red Sonja, and that was really funny, yeah.
Sorry, I just realised I missed out Test Match Special podcast I occasionally listen to, if I missed a day's play.
I've got two down, so the Saved by the Bell Go Bayside one.
Have you actually listened to that?
Yeah, that is genuinely funny. I think someone recommended that to us a very long time ago, but I think I've listened to the majority of those now. It's a comedian and a friend of hers that will sit in and review each episode and just sort of tear it apart in terms of its ridiculousness. And one that I don't know if I've mentioned before, but I probably should have if I haven't, that I think has informed a lot of the way I kind of write things, is one called Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Oh, you've told me about that before, yeah.
So they are very, very long podcasts about different historical topics, which is, you know, another area of interest that I have when I'm not watching 90s wrestling. Some of them are like one-part episodes. Some of them are like multi-part ones. Like, there's a five-part series on the Mongols called Wrath of the Khans, which is a brilliant title. But his way of delivering and recounting history is so engaging that you have to listen to these entire four-hour ones. They're fantastic.
Yeah. Darren Gamble. Who put the Raz in Razzmatazz?
Taz.
Chris Palmer. Thanks to getting fed up with not understanding all of those references to his music, I sought out Morrissey and can say that in a short time I became one of his biggest fans. So my question to you, the NGP crew, is as follows. What is your favourite Morrissey song and album? And not to skew your answers, but whoever answers with Southpaw Grammar and First of the Gang to Die may end up being my favourite of the three. Well, those were my personal options.
Noted Morrissey fan Paul Scrivens.
I'm not really, I don't really know much Morrissey stuff.
I like the last of the famous International Playboys, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, the last of the famous International Playboys.
You're the One for Me, Fatty. I'm a big fan of Suede Head.
Good shouts. I've got two songs down. Hairdresser on Fire, which is a brilliant title for a song and a brilliant song. And yes, Last of the Famous International Playboys, which I just cannot believe no one has taken as a wrestling gimmick.
Yes.
As a nickname.
That would be cool.
That is the greatest wrestling nickname that nobody has ever had, unless there's some indie guy out there that's used it. But someone with a bit of talent, take it, use it, get sued by Morrissey.
Pay him lots of money and get it as your theme song, because that'd be brilliant.
Make sure you tell him you're a vegan.
Yes.
He might be all right with it then. Album, Boner Drag, which is a collection of singles and B-sides from the very early stages of his career, from which both of those songs appear. So,
okay.
Yeah. Love Morrissey, love the Smiths, if I've not made that clear enough in the last 50 episodes. You're quite a fan as well, aren't you, Adam?
Bigger fan of the Smiths, I think, but I've just got a best of Morrissey. I think I've got the Suede Head best of, which is absolutely fantastic, but I don't own any of his studio albums. Maybe I should actually get some.
Well, just they're in my room.
Yeah, I'll borrow them.
All right, let's go now to the former World Heavyweight Champion.
You know something, Hulkamaniacs? The darkness in the Dungeon of Doom shakes in fear just because Hulk Hogan is walking around with the power of the training, the prayers, and the vitamins. Everyone from Kevin Sullivan to the Master to each and every creature that breathes the doom is afraid of Hulkamania because the training, the prayers, and the vitamins are immortal. They'll live forever. And now my brother of the road, the Macho Man, is on a mission. He's going to bring us the head of Ming on a silver platter. The first man on the destruction hit list of Hulkamania. And as he walks into the light of Nitro, may the maniacs be with him. But I feel a strange presence. After what went down with Sting and Luger, I don't know where Sting's head's at, brother. I don't know if Sting is in the dark side or the light side of Hulkamania, if he's friend or foe, brother. But when the Macho Man walks carefully into the lightness, when the Macho Man brings Ming's head back on a silver platter, before I go down the hit list, before we take him out one at a time, me and the Macho Man together, I'm gonna look at Sting somewhere in the eye, somewhere in the near future, and I'm gonna find out exactly where he's coming from. Because if he's on the Doom side with Sullivan, I'm gonna move his name to the top of the list, brothers. The stench in the Dungeon of Doom is not powerful enough to even make my little Hulkamaniacs shake in fear for one moment. So, Macho Man, from the love of Hulkamania to you, move fast, move swift, bring me the head of Ming on a silver platter. And what is the Dungeon of Doom gonna do when the Macho Man and Hulk Hogan take the darkness of the Doom and turn it to destroy you?
Chris Briefs. How would wrestling be different if Hogan never left WWF for WCW?
It would be very different. It's very hard to kind of look into that crystal ball, as it were.
Yeah, and to answer a question with such huge scope as well.
Yeah, because I often think that lots of what does happen will happen in its own
way
and in its own pace. So maybe we would just be a few years behind where we were. Maybe what it really did is that, you know, maybe it was just a catalyst for the changes that happened. And I think likely they would have happened anyway.
Where was he headed if he stayed in WWF?
Beating Yokozuna endlessly, probably.
Was he firmly planted at the top and would never move, or would someone eventually leapfrog him?
No, I can't see a situation where he'd allow anyone to leapfrog him.
So would it have killed WWF by him staying there?
No, because he would have jumped out before it got that bad. In fact, that's probably the reason he jumped at the point he did.
He thought that it was...
Yeah, they weren't delivering the ratings they were anymore. And, had he associated himself with them any longer? You know, the Raws in 1994, if you remember, some of those crowds, they're in like high school gyms, essentially.
Mm, yeah.
You know, does he want to be performing in them? Not really. So... if he'd have not left the WWF for WCW, he'd have probably just left anyway. Well, he didn't leave for WCW. He left.
For a film career.
And then a year later, was roped back into doing WCW. So,
Interesting.
Also, does anyone in the group enjoy horror films? And if so, which are your favourites?
I love horror films.
Which are your favourites?
My favourites would be Carpenter's The Thing.
Which, big fan of that,
If you've not seen that. For a film to grant the director the nickname of the pornographer of horror, I think is pretty great.
That explains why you like it anyway.
Well, it's the case of, you know, sometimes less is more in horror, and the scares when you can't see the thing is there, but the whole concept of, nah, fuck it, we'll just show it right to everyone's face is, you know, quite brilliant. On Carpenter again, the first Halloween film, I think it looks cliched these days, but it created the cliches. Really, really good. I fucking love Scream. Scream was absolutely fantastic. And what was that film where they go caving? The Descent?
Yeah, yeah.
I got a lot of time for this. The Descent. I thought that was a pretty creepy film. There's loads of others, but I don't want to sit here all night talking about horror films.
Tell you what I quite like is The Mist.
The bleak, horrible, horrible.
Have you seen that, Paul?
I've not seen really any horror films.
Cheery ending.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Horror films?
No.
Not at all?
I really haven't seen any.
Never any?
Not that I'd class as ones that were deliberately horror films. I've seen some
horrific films.
is it the Road?
Yes, The Road.
That was kind of got quite a lot of good reviews. And honestly, it's the most boring film. Like, honestly, how somebody got that made into a film and probably spent millions of dollars doing that is absolutely appalling.
I really like that film.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good. Yeah.
What's good about it? Nothing happens in it.
It's bleak to the point of being it's the bleak. Most depressing film in the world, but it's well made.
I don't think it is well made because nothing happens.
Have you read the book? It's based on a book.
No. Was it and because... I don't want to read the book now because nothing happens.
The book has babies on spikes.
But nothing happens.
Was it because it didn't involve people in a boardroom with Alan Sugar?
No, it's because it didn't really appear to have any spine of a storyline.
Okay.
I think...
But could you not imagine yourself in that situation with Baby Scrivens walking down the road?
Yeah, and I think it'd be a hell of a lot more interesting than that film.
Paul Scrivens in The Road.
Be better. Like, honestly, like... I mean, most films, if I don't like them, I'm fairly kind of... I don't get that invested in them. But I really hated that film. I don't know if it's come across. Hated it. I thought it was rubbish.
We should do a podcast where we get him to watch films that have come with high ratings and see what the Scrivens rating on the film
is. So like the top 100 films on IMDb.
I thought it was shit.
Honestly, very rubbish film. Don't waste your time.
Probably not really horror, but kind of is. I love Gremlins.
Well, it is horror, isn't it? It's comedy Christmas horror.
The first one is a lot more of a sort of dark comedy horror than the second one.
Yeah, the second one's slightly more light-hearted. Although I think the second one's still really
good. Yeah, the second one's still really, really good. And it's got Hulk Hogan in it.
I've not seen the first one. We should watch that around Christmas time.
We should watch that around Christmas time.
Have you ever seen Gremlins, Scrivens?
No.
We should watch... We should have a podcast evening where we watch Gremlins.
Okay.
It's fantastic. More into science fiction films, I would say, than horror films, personally. What? I like a lot of old horror films, like really old horror films.
All right, then. Alien.
Yeah.
Ultimate sci-fi horror.
Yeah, exactly. The thing I like as well. But stuff like the very old Nosferatu, which you went and saw with a piano score the other week.
Yes, absolutely amazing.
But yeah, that kind of thing I do quite like. But not a lot of modern horror, if I'm honest.
No. One thing that I think I probably would like, I'd probably really quite like more of the Hammer horror stuff, which I've not seen since I was a kid.
Mm.
But maybe I should go back and look at some of that at some point.
It's not a horror, but I did watch most of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, the other day, and that film's fucking great.
Yeah, that film is amazing. Have you ever seen that one, Scripps?
No.
Mark Mueller, what is your all-time dream match?
Bret Hart versus Bryan Danielson, favourite wrestler growing up versus favourite wrestler as an adult. That or Peak Vader versus modern Brock Lesnar.
Well, I was going to say modern Brock Lesnar versus early Big Papa Pump era Scott Steiner.
Oh, it's hard. Really boringly...
John Cena versus Randy Orton.
This is going to sound really lame now. But
Sheamus
like,
versus Alberto Del Rio.
No, it'd probably be something like Mick Foley against Triple H.
That has happened. I've got
No, it's happened. Doesn't mean it can't be my dream. Like, if I think back to like feuds that I think have everything, like in terms of emotion, in particular in terms of the anger and kind of the emotional buying as a viewer, and great wrestling, you know, that feud that they had in 2000 was amazing.
But if you had to pick then a match between two people that you don't think ever faced off that you'd like to see, who would you pick?
If I'm thinking about people that I just enjoy watching, probably something like... No, because that's happened as well. I was going to say, talking about Bryan Danielson, Regal against Danielson, but we saw that.
Yeah.
Live. Shawn Michaels against Bryan Danielson?
Yeah.
I think that would be a cool match. Yeah,
good choice.
Giant Gonzalez against Mantar.
Yeah, I don't think that did happen.
Hairy costume match.
Sam Stoke. If you're a wrestler of large size and strength, what one wrestler would you like to stiff, in brackets, actually thump in the ring?
Shawn Michaels in 1997.
Shawn Michaels in 1997.
Who don't I like? A wrestler that doesn't like The Road. Sorry, a wrestler that likes The Road film.
Dominic Schenderlaws. I've got some football-related questions. Which league is better, the Premier League, the Bundesliga, or perhaps even some other league?
Probably the Bundesliga. Like I've not seen much of it, but the Premier League's a funny league.
In that it's supposed to be the best league in the world, yet we get thumped in Europe every year.
So I can't hold water with it being the best league. I think it's quite an entertaining league, but that's not the same thing. Next question.
I've heard about British football fans that prefer the Bundesliga because it's more affordable than the Premier League. Would you share their opinion?
Football is not a cheap sport to follow. I mean, I don't follow it that closely, but if you are going to a lot of matches, it ain't cheap.
I assume you guys are all rooting for Leicester City, but do you follow any other teams?
Halifax.
Any particular reason?
Because when I was at high school, I randomly said to some person on my bus that they were talking about football, so I just randomly said, oh, I like Halifax, as a complete joke. And like when the the video printer used to be on the grandstand. I just happened to be watching the football results. I wasn't looking at it especially. Looking at it, Halifax won 6-0 that week. So it's like, better support them then. So I do like just take this little extra look at how Halifax are doing every now and again.
I go for Torquay United because when I was a kid, my neighbour was an ex-Torquay United player.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Adam?
No one else.
How come British football presenters and commentators are among the best there are in the world? In Germany, we'd kill for guys like Des Lynam, Elton Wellesby, Richard Keys, Gary Lineker or Martin Tyler to speak German. In all honesty, you can just have Richard Keys.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he is Alan Partridge. Did you watch that link I sent you of a tour around his house?
No.
It's genius. Yeah, a tour around Richard Keys' house. Okay. Brilliant.
No, I've not seen it.
Jake Mills, I don't think you have ever mentioned it, but what do you guys do for a living?
I work with addicts.
I work for the council doing lots of database stuff, spreadsheets.
Number crunching.
Generally speaking, yeah, I quite like it. It's quite a long job, but yeah.
I head up one of those generic council quangos to do with traffic enforcement.
You're something to do with Savio Vega?
Yep.
Quangos? Good Quango. Word.
Yeah, no one really knows what we do, but we get paid for it.
You shouldn't admit that.
Well,
hopefully no one from Leicester City Council listens.
Yeah. No, highly unlikely. Most surprising match you guys have covered?
Hogpen.
Yeah, I think the Hogpen's a good shout.
It's kind of a very odd match. If someone had said there's going to be a match with a Hogpen in it, I would have thought that'd be weird. Plus, but it actually worked.
Plus, it does come with quite a bad rep. It's not regarded as one of those kind of, oh, actually, this is all right kind of matches. It's regarded as one of those, no, this is crap.
Surprisingly very entertaining. I really quite like the Hogpen match.
Yeah. And surprising in a negative way, I'd say Shawn Michaels versus Mr. Perfect from SummerSlam 93.
Yeah.
Because when you say that match, you think,
it
wow.
It should be amazing, yeah. But it's really...
not.
Yeah, just kind of
mildly
dull.
Tedious.
And what would you guys consider the best and worst Hell in a Cell match?
So I've got three down for the best.
Go on then, go for it.
The first one?
I think Mankind against Undertaker.
That's not the one I've got.
Is it not? Then in that case, I'm going to go for the Armageddon Hell in a Cell.
Lesnar Undertaker, the first one.
Yeah.
That's badass.
I think that is very overrated.
Yeah, but you didn't like the road.
Which means I've got taste.
And my third one I've got down is Batista versus Triple H.
I love that match. I think that was a great match. I think I remember watching it around your house in Bedford once and possibly being blown away by it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's one of those matches as well where if Triple H ever wants to make an argument for, I really helped people, like that's his crown jewel of like, yeah, actually Batista probably wouldn't have been as over as he was if it wasn't for beating Triple H three matches in a row, concluding with that Hell in a Cell match, which I actually, you know, still really like.
Mm.
Worst?
Kennel from Hell. There you go.
Yeah, I've still not seen that.
It's comically bad, right? When you've got sleeping and shitting dogs around the side of the ring.
Where do you put the very first Hell in a Cell in that mixed?
It was on my list.
It was his first one.
The first thing I said was the first one.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't listening closely enough.
Or at all.
I got very distracted by your Batista one, because I thought that was coming up.
Which I said about a minute later.
Yeah. But I got distracted by it. I'm sticking with that excuse. Don't question me on it. It makes me look silly.
Generally speaking, Hell in a Cell matches are pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Or have they kind of lost their magic?
Yeah, in that all the matches, gimmick matches, lost their magic to an extent when they were bought into yearly rotation rather than being the culmination of an issue that demands it.
Yeah, when they were just, oh, that's the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. I never really got that as a...
Oh, it's October, we must have some Hell in a Cells. Oh, it's June, we must have some money in the banks.
There's no one in a feud that demands a Hell in a Cell, but we're just going to have some
like
anyway.
The 10-minute CM Punk Undertaker one that opened that pay-per-view and was just bad.
Mm. Now that you came back to the darkness... Now that it all went down with Ming, brother, a lot of the questions, a lot of the mystery about the Dungeon of Doom, about whose friend and whose foe will be answered starting this Monday night on Nitro Macho Man.
But what I want to know, Hogan, is where you staying after I ordered Hulk Hogan? Where were you? Did you make the bad decision? Where are you coming from, Sting? Because if you did, this Monday night on Nitro will be the first on the structure. option hit list, and you will pull guaranteed.
Well, you know something, Macho Man? This Monday night, I call the first little dog out from under the bed, brother. The Stinger took the challenge, and he will meet Hulk Hogan in the center of the ring. And now that I'm wielding the power, now that Hulk Hogan is stepping out of the darkness, and the training, and the prayers, and the vitamins are on the line, if the Stinger has made the wrong decision, Macho Man, I will take the dagger, the one that Jimmy Hart stabbed me in the back with, and I will make Sting our first victim on the hit list, brother, of the Dungeon of Doom, Macho Man.
And by hook or by crook, I will be in your corner, yeah, just to watch your back.
Well, Macho Man, with you watching my back, with the Stinger in the center of the ring, with the whole Dungeon of Doom in fear, World War III is around the corner, brother. The WCW title is hovering over our heads. And if the Stinger has made the wrong decision this Monday night on Nitro, this will be a little sample of what the Macho Man and Hulk Hogan will do now that we will wield the power to end the reign of terror by the Dungeon of Doom. Stinger, think before you step. Stinger, think before you move, Stinger. Hulk Hogan is on a mission, brother. The training, the prayers, the vitamins are on the line. And what you gonna do Monday night when the Dungeon of Doom in the darkness and the power of Hulkamania confront you? Ooh, yeah!
Gareth Scannell, what do you think Sonny's finishing move is? That's a question for Adam specifically.
I've written an answer down. The money shot. It's a finisher.
Dragon screw leg whip.
Joshua Kennedy, why haven't you discussed the joy and wonder that was Fantasio? In the annals of bad gimmicks, the wrestling magician really has to be up there. I know Mantar is and always will be the true face of 1995 WWF, but could you just touch upon a gimmick so bad that it couldn't even get on the air? It did get on the air.
We never covered it, though.
No, I watched it, but yeah, it's literally one match on, I think it's Superstars rather than Wrestling Challenge. Pretty sure it's not Raw. Might be.
Who was he facing?
Some random jabroni, but it involves him pulling Earl Hebner's pants out from his trousers, and yeah, it's
you
bad.
What?
Wrestling magician, Fantasio, look it up.
Well, I think this sounds like a really promising gimmick. I can't see it being bad.
He pulls like handkerchiefs out of his mouth, you know, like endless magician thing. Yeah.
You should do like that, with brass knucks.
Pull brass knucks out of his mouth.
Mm. Yeah.
Luke Robert Bale, what are some of your favourite wrestling DVDs? My personal favourites are CM Punk, Best in the World, Kevin Steen, Descent into Madness, and 2014 PWG Battle of Los Angeles Tourney.
I've got both Bret Hart sets down. The Best Is, Was, Ever Will Be, and the Dungeon Collection. Big fan of those. The Paul Heyman DVD and the first Chris Jericho set.
Yeah, that first Chris Jericho set is very good. The Stone Cold one I thought was very good. The latest Stone Cold one.
The 3 Blu-ray, 4 DVD.
Yeah, that was decent. I say, yeah, the Heyman one was good. The CM Punk one was very good.
Paul?
I don't really have anything to add to that. I've just not seen enough.
The Road.
Stop going on about The Road. It's actually making me slightly angry every time I say it. Because you make it like, when you say stuff like that, it makes me question, like, it's like the Dean Malenko Ultimo Dragon match all over again. Because you're making me question, oh, actually, was it better than I thought it was? But no, I remember it being really bad. Not that match, The Road. I don't like that match.
Maybe you need to rewatch both of those things.
No. I'll watch the match. Chris Hopkins, where do you think the business would be today if Turner hadn't given Bischoff prime time for Nitro to take on Raw?
Probably still endless squashes week after week after week.
That'd be good.
Tom Baker. And
Tom Baker?
Yeah, Doctor Who.
Okay.
Another celebrity listener.
Oh, there you go.
I'm guessing you two haven't actually looked at this, but
no.
In late October, Hulk Hogan's 1998 WCW contract appeared online, and he just asks us to discuss this madness. So what I've done is I've got a couple of highlights from it to just get your thoughts on. So he gets a $2 million bonus paid to him within 14 days simply for signing the contract.
$2 million.
$2 million.
Just for signing the contract.
Just for actually signing it.
Who the hell did he have negotiating this for him? Some maverick.
It's a lot of money for signing your name.
25% of all ticket revenue for any Nitro or Thunder on which he appeared.
He wants a quarter of the gate.
No, not once, got.
So even those ones that we've seen, where the only contribution he does is come out and wiggle his bottom, he gets a quarter of the gate receipts for that show.
So if somebody is paying $100 for a ticket that night, $25 of that goes to Hulk Hogan.
Jesus.
15% of all pay-per-view sales, or $675,000, whichever was higher, for every pay-per-view he appears on.
I want at least 675, did you say?
Yeah.
$1,000.
Yeah.
For every pay-per-view.
Yeah. So if the buy rate is shit, I still get 675,000, but if the buy rate's really good, I get
a million.
More. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hulk's right of approval on any non-wrestling-related merchandising and licensing, which includes, but is not limited to, and get this is in the order it's listed in the document, pasta restaurants, sandwiches, suntan oil, health drink mixers, and vitamins.
Sandwiches?
So if someone in WCW markets a Hulk Hogan sandwich, Hulk gets to say, no, brother. It needs some cheese on it.
Fair dues.
This is batshit.
I mean, if it was a cheese sandwich, that is especially true.
Especially if it was one of Adam's cheese sandwiches that has very little cheese on it.
Adam's thrifty.
Yeah, they're very nice.
Oh, and under licensed products, which are listed at the end of which he gets his merchandise royalties, something is listed called a mug tee, which is apparently defined as a T-shirt in a mug, which is a piece of merchandising I don't think I've ever seen. But brilliant.
A T-shirt in a mug?
Is the mug reusable?
I would hope so.
Well, that's odd. I think I've seen a T-shirt in a can.
I've seen a T-shirt in a can, but I've not seen a T-shirt in a mug.
A T-shirt in a mug would be better, because obviously you just throw the can away, but you could have a cup of tea in the mug.
I've seen a T-shirt on a mug.
I've seen a mug on a T-shirt.
That too, yeah.
So basically, Hulk Hogan in 1998 had a pretty sweet deal with WCW. If you get the chance, go and read this document. I've sent you both the link to it.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Cody Gatlin. Favourite ring music from the 90s. Mine is Owen's Rocket synth funk music, Eddie's Low Rider knockoff, and Steve Blackman's drum heavy intro music.
I've got down Heavenly Bodies, Adam Bomb, Dungeon of Doom, Hakushi, and Brian Pillman's Blondes Have More Fun.
Razor Ramon. I like it.
I don't. You can't go wrong with Sexy Boy, to be fair. That is a good theme.
That is a good theme.
What about the theme to the road?
Shut up. William J. Lenhart. If Bray Wyatt is the eater of worlds, what would he poop?
Water, sand, mud, magma.
Some kind of iron core.
Yeah, and dead animal carcasses.
Lots of silicates, probably.
Ignacio Villarreal. How do I convince my wife to finally review WCW from 1996 to 2001? I convinced her to go to Dallas for WrestleMania, but still no go on podcast shenanigans.
Well, it's a serious thing. It means every couple of weeks I get to hang out with Adam and Stuart. So you say to your wife that once, probably every 2 weeks, depending on how often you want to release a show, you'll get to hang out together.
if it's his wife, do you not think they get to hang out quite a lot?
Depends how busy they are.
They're too busy to watch the road or be happy or something.
Yeah, maybe they just got caught up in watching the road and it made them very sad.
Don't know. Maybe try bargaining. I'm not a relationship expert, as you may have guessed by the amount of wrestling I've watched.
Gold. Diamonds.
Convince her it will make you rich. It won't. Probably won't. But convince her it might.
Try and link it in with Total Divas.
She could become an internet celebrity.
Yeah.
You could sell T-shirts with her name on.
Yes.
Work for us.
Ricky Michael Hill. Will we ever see a live podcast?
Probably not, because you'd have to hear all of Paul Scriven's gas.
And breathing, apparently.
And coffee and toilet breaks.
You could work it into a show, though. That's
maybe it. I'll just release an episode one day that's all the sections I've edited out that are just you lot making cups of tea or going to the toilet.
That'd be the most boring podcast ever.
Did you ever get the sound of Adam vomiting on that show, Beware of a Dog Show?
No.
Could you not hear it in the background, the splatter?
No.
Oh, that's
I'm so glad that you didn't follow me in with the fucking recorder and a microphone. Jesus. That was not a good morning.
You could hear you vomiting from the living room.
You guys mention and use some cracking music often.
That's me. I do all of that.
Yeah, take all the credit for it. What are your favourite gigs, festivals that you've been to?
I've got down as favourite gigs. We saw Neutral Milk Hotel last year, and that was...
I was borderline moved to tears, actually.
Yeah, that was something I thought I'd never get to see. I mean, I'd seen Jeff Mangum about 18 months before that, but actually seeing the full band was something quite special. Mark Kozlek I saw quite a lot in the mid-2000s, and he was always fun in the kind of way that when singers hate their audience and really resent them, so rip on them for the entire gig. Bruce Springsteen in Hyde Park was incredible. And a band I don't think I've mentioned before, but I think I have used their songs in 8-bit form, Slint, at All Tomorrow's Parties was very, very good. Another band I didn't think I'd ever get to see.
Been to a lot of festivals, I would say.
Sex festivals.
Best festivals. I had a really good time at Glastonbury in 2002. I thought that was really good. You were there at the Ozfest in Milton Keynes Bowl in 2001.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. We saw the original lineup of Black Sabbath.
And Tool.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw Tool. Alice Cooper, I saw in 2002. That was brilliant.
Did he chop Britney Spears' head off?
He decapitated a Britney Spears, which I believe might have been his daughter dressed as Britney Spears. I don't know.
Kind of creepy.
But then he had his own head cut off with a guillotine. So that was brilliant. We saw REM, didn't we?
In Twickenham.
That was absolutely brilliant. When was that?
2008. It's like 2 years maybe before they split, so we timed that well.
Yeah, it was quite close to it. I've seen, knocking around lots of festivals, so I've been to, you know, Reading, Leeds and Glastonbury and, you know, various other bits and bobs. So I've seen quite a few amazing acts. I'd say James Brown was a good highlight. That was pretty cool. Morrissey.
Yeah, I've seen Morrissey.
Morrissey was pretty good.
I saw Johnny Marr play with Modest Mouse. That was quite cool.
Neil Young. I thought was really, really good. Seen some of the other random ones. Paul McCartney was surprisingly good, and that really surprises me because I'm not a big fan of him.
Did he do the Frog song?
He did not.
Oh, I tell you one I forgot to mention that we were both at. Hold Steady and Gaslight Anthem on a New York pier as the sunset.
Yeah, that was very cool.
It was raining and a bit cold.
But they were serving that Bengali Tiger beer, which was really tasty.
Notice how everybody Adam's memory doesn't work unless he can link it to a particular alcoholic beverage.
That is not the case.
Paul?
Iron Maiden I saw a few years ago at the NEC. That was pretty cool, a band that I've liked for a very long time.
I've seen Maiden. They do put on a bloody good show, I would say. What will the New Gen Project section at WrestleMania 32 look like? I'm imagining something akin to Ric Flair's Champagne and Caviar VIP section circa Nitro 1996, with Scrivens playing the Randy Savage role irate that he's not going.
I imagine it'll just look a lot like me and Adam sat in some chairs.
Are you going to dress up special?
I might put a T-shirt on.
I don't know. What do you wear for a WrestleMania?
Probably a tuxedo. Or actually, trousers, suspenders and a tie and hold a briefcase.
Mm.
You should definitely do that.
Like IRS?
Exactly.
Not IRS. The IRS.
I'm not going as the IRS.
Yeah, it would just look like me and Adam sat in some seats with two of our friends.
You've got two friends going?
Yeah.
Who?
Dan and Tom.
Are they going as well?
Yeah. Did you not know this?
Who's Dan and Tom? You trying to replace me? You edging me out of the podcast?
Never. We'd be adrift without you.
You got like the premier invite to come.
Yeah, you did.
I thought it was a joke.
You thought I was joking.
Yeah. Neil Bainbridge, how much time do you have to edit out of each episode?
Well, that depends.
That depends on if Adam's having one of his Scrivens days, like he is today.
It depends on a number of things, okay? So that depends on whether Adam needs to vomit. It depends.
That's happened once.
It depends on...
In 50 times.
It depends
2%.
On... 2%. Yeah, exactly. It depends on whether we need the toilet or whether we need a refreshment break. It depends on whether Paul starts telling stories that go nowhere and I have to edit them out. It depends on if sections become increasingly unfunny and I just have to get rid of them. It depends on if Adam says something really inappropriate.
Yeah, that rarely happens.
But then sometimes it's as part of a more relevant conversation, and that's when the bleep button has to come out. So it depends. There was no average amount of time going through this recording session. I think there will be very little that needs to be edited out apart from some ums and ers, but there can be episodes where nearly an hour of stuff is lost, but that's across me fucking up certain bits of matches that I've just twisted my tongue on, people going for drinks, people going to the toilet, stories that don't go anywhere, sections hard that words. Aren't funny. Hard words that Paul has trouble with.
That occasionally 10 to 15 minute section at the start of the podcast where we're just talking bollocks.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, where we're trying to find some sort of funny material for an intro.
Or we're just trying to get the levels right.
Yeah. Or if I'm just listening to Paul say Richard Quarry's name like 54 times.
Richard Quarry.
There's no average amount.
Well, no, that's not true, is it? Because you could clearly take a mean average.
Okay. I can't think what the average amount is. Jeff Maxfield. I'm not sure how connected you guys are to OSW Review and the AE podcast, but is there ever going to be a crossover episode for perhaps something like the final transition from New Gen to Attitude? That would be a hell of a complicated thing to do, have nine people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, they live far apart from us, so probably not. Jay and I were both on the Piledriver WrestleMania review, so that might be the closest thing you get to it. So if you want to listen to he and I have some discussions with Luke and Rory from Piledriver, that's on that. And you guys talk a bit about wrestling games. Which are you more interested in? The ones with slash without creator character options? If the answer is with, are you more prone to play with your custom characters or do you use the roster that is offered?
Well, who have you recently created with the latest version of WWE?
So, yeah, I picked up WWE 2K16 the other Sunday and I started playing the career mode where you build your superstar and go up the ranks, and I have built El Hijo del Mantar, son of Mantar.
He's excellent.
He did struggle to start off with as I accustomed to the new controls.
He's still getting his ass kicked by Tyler Breeze a lot.
But then in our big feud ender, I did beat him.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
and I've recently won the NXT title from Finn Balor and I'm having some cracking matches on Superstars, although I don't seem to be able to have many matches better than 3.5 stars.
It's always good when you've got the creator character function within the games, I think. Although was that really old one, like WrestleFest or something?
Yeah, the arcade one.
It was absolutely amazing. Brilliant, brilliant game. But we've talked about it before, our SmackDown character creations used to take up a lot of time and they were always good fun. Shams Bayani, have you ever reached out to anyone from your podcast timeline to do a Q&A? Or conversely, has someone reached out to you to be on the show? I know you've mentioned wanting Sonny to come onto the show in the past, and people like Jim Cornette do other podcasts all the time.
Honestly, no, we've never asked anyone to be on. No.
I guess closest is the little interview with Brett, but that was just
something
a bit different, really.
Yeah. Mike Quackenbush has asked to be on if we ever do Royal Rumble 93 or 92, so if we could set that up at some point in the future, that would be cracking.
That would be really cool. Yeah.
Yes.
To get his insights onto things would be...
But no, we've never asked anyone to be on the podcast. Certainly be open to kind of... Like, it'd be cool to sit down with someone like Sean Waltman and just discuss the events of this timeline.
Yeah.
How would you go about that?
You'd walk up to them with a microphone and go, yeah, I'll answer these questions.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never tried. If anyone wants to put us in touch with anyone, feel free.
Keith Dooley, is Jamie Vardy the second coming of Christ?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think he's a footballer who's doing quite well at the minute.
Chat shit, get banged, Scrivens.
What?
It's a comment from his Facebook from about 4 years ago that's become sort of mildly viral on the internet.
Okay.
Chat shit, get banged. Giorgio Vernetti, I have a question for @WrestleMaths. With you being the maximum expert in all of wrestling on the subject of maths and maths-related measurements, I'm sure you'll be able to answer the question that has been puzzling wrestling fans for years and years now. In your opinion, judging from his physical mass, his velocity of movements, and his all-round intriguing pelvic girth, how big is Batista's dick?
Are there not rumours about he's had a few lady friends in the divas department?
Supposedly.
So presumably, if the others are kind of recommending him to their friends... Is that how it works?
I don't know. Ask Mrs. Scrivens.
Well, but anyway, presumably they must feel he's a good catch, you know, a nice chap.
Nice chap.
With maybe some other attributes. So probably pretty big, I don't know.
Tom Keeley. People talk about how wrestling has changed today in regards to the death of kayfabe, a lack of true heels and true wrestling matches. From watching these pay-per-views, can you see a difference, or is it just the fans lamenting the past by saying, well, in my day?
I just think wrestling's about something different now. In the 70s and 80s and very early 90s, it was more about inciting that real emotional face heel type reaction. Whereas I think today it's more generating strong feelings about the athleticism and being attached to seeing athletes that you're interested in do well.
Yeah, it's evolved, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very different product than what it was and 20 years ago.
And that's because wrestling doesn't operate in isolation, does it?
Yeah.
You know, it operates in the world, and the world has changed. The internet has changed
the world.
Lots of things, including the world. And including
the road.
Including the road and wrestling. Graham Prentice, if you had to make someone reach main event status, who would it be and how would they get there?
Marty Jannetty, Survivor Series 2015, tournament to be WWF champion.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all on board with that.
Yeah.
Make it happen. Mike Hacks, favourite wrestling stable?
Right to censor.
The Dungeon of Doom / the 1997 Hart Foundation.
The Dungeon of Doom were great, weren't they?
The Dungeon of Doom were great. I don't know if I'd have thought they were great.
The alliance to end all of Hulkamania?
Temporary faction, really. Sort of involved the Dungeon of Doom, but Kamala had left.
I honestly don't know.
You've forgotten all of the factions.
I've never had a particularly massive investment in any factions, I wouldn't say.
Right.
I might be wrong. You might mention one of the arguments. Oh, shit.
Kai and Tai?
I never had a massive investment apart from I looked a little bit like one of them.
And Dick Togo, I believe, wore a lot of Iron Maiden t-shirts.
I wasn't really watching it at that stage.
Okay.
Luke Robert Bale. On a previous episode of the podcast, Stuart mentioned that he hated Davey Richards. Why does he hate him so much? And do you all have any other wrestlers that you don't like? Batista and The Miz are my picks. You know, why don't you like Davey Richards?
Nobody comes out of Davey Richards matches looking any better than Davey Richards. And I hated the idea that when Daniel Bryan signed with WWE that Davey Richards was the new Bryan Danielson, because he wasn't. Bryan Danielson had matches with everybody on that independent circuit and everybody became better and looked better for having worked with him, whereas Davey Richards matches only served to make Davey Richards look better and more badass, therefore making him nowhere near being the new Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Therefore, I really don't like him.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a lot about Davey Richards, but can't argue with that explanation.
I've just convinced you to hate him.
Yeah.
Any particular wrestlers you detest?
Detest? I'm not a big fan of Mojo Rawley. Mm. I don't like the hyped
gimmick.
I don't really get it. His gimmick is he's got ADHD.
Basically.
I'm not on with it. But then again, I'm liable to change. I didn't like that smelly hippie either. But then once he started cutting promos where he said that he drove like a 1.3-litre Fiesta or something and was better for the environment than everyone else, I really quite like that.
We watched his heel turn promo recently, didn't we?
It was brilliant, yeah. He talked about recycling.
Anyone you hate particularly there, Scrivens? That's just a major turn-off if they're in a match for you?
No. I'm pretty placid unless it's bad films.
China, looking back at old stuff, you know when you watch China matches?
Yeah.
When she's like having a run where she's winning IC titles and running over like loads of the blokes. They're quite upsetting to watch, I think.
Greg O'Dale, who is a wrestler everyone hates but you love?
Hard to say if there's a wrestler that everyone hates that I love, but I do like stupid gimmicks, I think, perhaps more than I should. So Papa Shango and Max Moon are both golden to me. Like Max Moon is a license to print money. Man from outer space. Get Neville in that Max Moon suit. People will believe he's from another planet. Have him talking Geordie. They'll definitely believe he's an alien.
As I said, I really like Right to Censor, and I think most people didn't like them.
Any answer on that one from your Scrivens?
I just can't think of anyone.
You're just too consumed with the road now, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Ian McGarry, what is your favourite Total Divas moment and your favourite diva from the show?
Favourite diva is probably Naomi, as she comes across as the most normal and well-rounded of the bunch, which is probably why they've axed her from the upcoming series.
She gone?
Yeah, she's done.
Well, I always thought that Paige came out looking, you know, odd but better than... She seemed like a lot more well-rounded fun rather than serious mental problems.
I quite like Rosa Mendez because it's an entertainment show and she's very entertaining.
Yeah, as far as moments, because I've seen quite a lot of Total Divas now, to my shame, the one where they have that... Where Cameron has that house party in Natalia's house.
Yeah.
And they lose the cat. That was pretty good.
If just for that Uso shouting, has anybody seen Natty's pussy? across a room of crowded people. Moments I've got down is Natalya gives Bree and Brian an awful painting as a wedding gift.
Yeah.
That one classic. Is brilliant. And Heath Slater and Titus O'Neil take Natalya to a strip club and Tyson Kidd sits in the car acting Marty about it.
Yes, that was very good. Fandango goes on a date with Summer Rae.
Yes, or
that was good.
Actually, no, his date with Eva Marie is even better because that he's proper
that was really
out
good as well, yeah.
I think out of the bits that I've seen, I did really enjoy the therapy session, if you know the bit that's
Natalya and Tyson Kidd.
Yeah, Natty and Tyson Kidd. I thought that was very entertaining. And I thought the Danielsons shopping for
a washing machine
was surprisingly gold.
Also, Rosa Mendez's big purple dog. you can't go wrong with that, right?
I knew you'd have to mention it.
Jason Jaskulski. If you could handpick any four wrestlers to form a Doink stable, what wrestlers would you pick and why? I've got Steve Lombardi, Ray Apollo, Matt Bourne and Chris Jericho.
Right to censor, but take an app suits and put into clown outfits.
Pick Kai and Tai.
Kai and Tai. Because I look a little bit like one of the people from Kai and Tai, apparently.
Mike Foster. I'll be wearing my Scrivens 3.14 shirt to NXT London. Should I take a Bunkhouse Bob Monkhouse sign too?
Yes.
Yes, probably.
Jason Woodford. What's your favourite and least favourite finishing moves? And do you think the days of finishing moves has ended due to the amount of times people kick out of them? Certainly that's a really interesting question about the kick outs. They do mean less.
Favourite ones I've got down are the cross-faced chicken wing and the perfect plex. Big fan of those. Least favourite is the heart punch.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
And whatever Great Khali did, that brain chop thing.
Yeah.
Didn't you do the head squeeze thing?
And he did that too, yeah.
There's some good moves. Like I said before, choke bottom I'm a big fan of.
Not really a finisher, though. He doesn't finish the match with it.
No, but you could do. That could be a finishing move.
I've always been a big fan of just the tombstone. I think Undertaker's tombstone's a good finishing move. Least favourite ones. I didn't like Umaga's Samoan Spike. I think I might have mentioned this before.
Yeah, it's only better moves.
Yeah, Umaga was really quite talented and can do loads of cool-looking stuff. The Samoan Spike, it's like Terry Gordy's thumb, isn't it?
I think it's better than Terry Gordy's thumb.
It was slightly better. It was covered in bandages.
All right, Tony Bobby, it is time to fish or cut bait because tonight 60 men are going to be vying for the title of WCW Heavyweight Champion of the World, Macho Man Randy Savage Sting. Hulk Hogan, a lot of people are picking you to regain your title tonight. At this capacity, crowd no exception here in Norfolk.
Well, you know something, Mean Gene. Out of something bad always comes something good, brother. Because these Hulkamaniacs have stood with me with the training, the prayers, and the vitamins, I took a walk to the dark side, brother. If I would have taken the final step, maybe I wouldn't be here with my two best friends tonight. But, brother, now I know who my friends are, man. And tonight, the dark side of Hulk Hogan, brother, will be no more, brother. The dark side of Hulk Hogan is over, brother. That's the deal. And just like everybody else, man, we're going to burn the Dungeon of Doom, brother. I will never, ever again question Sting. Macho Man's my friend. Sting has stuck by me since day one. I want to be your friend forever. I don't care what your trip is with Lex Luger. I will always be your friend, Stinger.
I'm with it! The Hulkster! Yes! That is WCW! And the black is gone for good! Right, Mutch?
When you're wrong, and I was wrong, and I just want to say I'm sorry. You're the coolest dude in the world.
I think we got a little fire going here. Can somebody get this out, Hulk? I get the point.
Well, you know something, Mean Gene? Something that's really funny that we've been laughing about in the back is the fact that everybody said the Macho Man has a legitimate injury, brother. What a joke. The Macho Man's arm is perfect. That was just a plan. Because between the Stinger, Macho Man, and Hulk Hogan, the WCW title, brother, is going to be with the Hulkamaniacs. Just like the people.
You can hear him, Hulk. Listen to him.
You know something, brother? Observe this, brother. This is what we call a rag sheet, brother. They say the Giant is going to win the match. They said Macho Man was hurt. This is like a dinosaur compared to the internet, brother. The internet's got the scoops. We're going to steal the belt, the Stinger, Macho Man, and Hulk Hogan together. The Macho Man's not hurt. And what are you Hulkamaniacs going to do when the Stinger, Macho Man, and Hulk Hogan run wild on you guys? What are they going to do?
I have no idea what they're going to do. I know one thing. The black has been burned. Hulk Hogan back in a yellow red of Hulkamania along with Sting and the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
It's quite late at night, so we've not quite finished these questions. So I think what we'll do is we'll insert them into the start of the next couple of episodes rather than doing kind of audience challenge things to make sure we honour our commitment to get these questions answered. But I do have one in particular that I'd like to finish this set of the New Generation game on.
Go on then.
And this one is specifically for you, Paul Scrivens.
Okay.
It's from Tom Roper, and it says, Paul Scrivens, we are both maths enthusiasts, chemistry graduates, and wrestling podcasters. How did you meet a woman?
Well, it's a long story.
Tell us the road to meeting a woman.
The road? I took Mrs. Grimm to see that film and we both hated it. I guess it started off when I met her. I'd known Mrs. Grimm for a little while before I actually asked her out. But the first time I asked her out, she did turn me down.
How did you ask her? What was
she? It was really bad. It was just kind of through sheer fit and me not being terribly good with women, as you may guess from that question. Kind of mathsy, chemistry, wrestlingy people aren't necessarily like the most
lady killers. Unless it's sexual chemistry.
Oh, yeah.
That's your new gimmick, sexual chemistry, Paul Scrivens.
Sexual chemistry, Paul Scrivens. Well, that is what my degree was in.
Sexual chemistry.
What classification did you get?
Well, I did my modules. I did my organic chemistry, my physical chemistry, and my sexual chemistry. It's 20 units. I had a 3-hour lab every week.
It's really sore by the end of term. So you asked her out and she turned you down.
Yeah,
Roper needs the details. Come on.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so I asked her out and she turned me down. And like throughout this time, I did little things to kind of try, it sounds bad to use, but not buy her affections, but earn her affections. Not a prostitute.
It's not a pretty woman situation.
I've not seen that film either. But so one of the things I did is this is not long. We talked about the Wii last episode, didn't we? I'd bought a Wii from your shop, actually, in Bedford, I believe. Yeah. And one of the things that I did very soon after buying it is I took it round to Mrs. Scriven's house, where she lived with her friend. And I left it there as a bit of an excuse to kind of keep going around and playing.
Subtle, well done.
My problem is I'm wildly competitive, and if I was to lose, I'd just get really upset and have a bit of a paddy, which probably didn't paint me in a great light. So I did that for a while, and then did like really nice little romantic things, like I bought her a plant. It was a Venus flytrap, so then I'd... So like, I bought her that one week, and the next week I went round with a box of dead flies. Which
that
apparently
you bought
don't
or caught?
That I bought. There was a room in my work which had lots of dead flies in, so I kind of got them all into like a little matchbox. Didn't really work, didn't help them. So this kind of went on for a little while, and I thought, well, I've got to kind of...
Up your game.
Up the ante. So, again, this sounds worse than it actually is, but I effectively broke into her house. With Adam's help.
Sorry, what?
I say broke in. I was good friends with her housemate at the time. And so we kind of organised a ruse to get Mrs. Scrivens to go out of the house. So once when she went out of the house, I went into the house. I had a key. It wasn't like breaking and entering or anything. But it's not a crime because I cleaned up the place a bit. So I did a quick tidy, you know, then I got some champagne out. I, you know, put candles around, put some nice music on. I got just through an earlier conversation that we had, I got a particular episode of Friends kind of queued up.
What's nice music?
It was Newton Fortnight. It was something that I knew that she liked and was into. Yeah. So yeah. I know I like it. Like,
probably get some Morrissey.
Hairdresser on Fire.
Okay.
Would have done it.
But so yeah, I did this, but then I thought, well, this is a bit dodgy. Like, it might look a little bit like intimidating.
Stalky.
To him. But we're getting on fairly well, so I thought it was on reasonable ground. It wasn't a complete...
out of left field.
Yeah. But what I did is I kind of left a bit of a warning note that they had an outside door and then they had like an inner kind of door.
By the way, someone you don't expect to be in the house is in the house.
So, but basically, yes.
May have trousers on.
Well, I did have trousers on. But it was a little bit more romantic than that and kind of explained that the soul's in there and whatever. And the only problem is she came in and she went to put on the lights, obviously, which I'd put out to make it look how it was before. And the lights tripped. So, like, all the power in the house went off. So she couldn't read this note. And kind of, I had to kind of stumble out to help her find the trip switch. And kind of... But anyway, it went all right. And...
It clearly worked. It was clearly endearing enough to work.
And one thing led to another.
And then there was a baby Scrivens.
And then there was a baby Scrivens, just 5 short years later.
So when you were planning this whole breaking and entering romantic gesture thing, what would you have calculated your percentage chance that it was going to go well?
Reasonably, like over 50.
Closer to 100 or closer to 50?
It'd probably be around that 75%. The problem is, I don't have great self-confidence when it comes to romancing. And so I kind of like, when you look back and you look back at the signals, you kind of think, of course she liked me. It was obvious. But as somebody... but as somebody who wasn't very secure in himself at the time, it was like, does she like me? She could have made that clearer. She's put kisses at the end of this text message, but what does that mean exactly? What's the code here? How many do I need to get before I'm on a safe footing? So all of those little clues or cues I didn't necessarily pick up on. But yeah, I thought I was on relatively safe ground.
And you were, it turns out.
And it was turned up, but literally the great thing is that I did get Adam to help me kind of set up, as it were, because I had all this stuff that I wanted to take in, so like...
I was the accomplice.
Yeah, so like getting like the champagne flutes out ready and setting up all the candles, getting everything lit quickly, because I kind of got her on this, kind of ruse to go out. I got my friend who she lived with to say that she'd gone to a shop but forgotten her purse and that she had to go out and take her purse to go and buy something. But so I knew that I'd probably have, given the distance, at least 10 to 15 minutes. And kind of that was my window in which to kind of get everything tidied and everything set up.
I don't think you told me this plan before we did it.
What did he tell you were doing?
I planned it like 2 days in advance.
I don't know. I can't imagine what, because I can't really remember. I can't imagine what I thought.
You weren't drunk.
As I left the house, having left you in there tidying up with a load of candles, I don't know what I would have thought. I'm glad it went well.
Yeah.
See, I remember when you got a girlfriend, because you used to come and see me. This is when I lived away quite a lot, and then you stopped.
I'm sorry about that.
But thank you all for listening to Late Night Love with Paul Scrivens.
But I feel more sorry for Adam, because we lived together and then eventually Mrs. Scrivens pushed you out of the house.
Yeah.
But that worked out great.
Metaphorically or literally?
Kind of both.
Physically, right? They shoved right out.
But yeah, so that led to Adam and I's story of how we met and first asked each other out. And that's a really interesting story.
I got home to my house one day and Stuart was in there. And the house was full of candles.
And I was helicoptering my penis.
And I called the police.
But then changed his mind. And it all worked out happily ever after.
Yeah. So my story, I think, when I've told people that story in the past, there's two reactions. It's like, one is, oh, that is the most romantic thing anybody's ever done. Or... how did you not get arrested? It's kind of, it elicits those, one of those two responses, and I think it's like who you have in mind to play the...
You were treading both those lines.
I think it was a fine...
You're a risk taker.
Yeah, that's me all over. That mathematical risk taker me.
Well, that is a lovely story, and what a romantic note to end this episode on.
You have to play some nice, you know, like...
Romantic music underneath. Maybe, like, M People or The Lighthouse Family.
Crazy For You by Madonna.
Or Let Loose, or something like that. Savage Garden.
Please play some Savage Garden.
Or Maria McKee, Show Me Heaven. I wonder if there's an 8-bit version of that.
That's a good song.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Paul. So, Tom... you now know what you've got to do. There is a 50% chance you'll get arrested.
Yeah,
but there's a 50% chance you'll be married with a kid.
I would say that tactic that I've described, it worked for me, but warning for everyone, it is not for everyone. Repeat, this is not a license to go and break into somebody's house.
Please don't try this at home.
Yeah, literally, please. I don't want to be like the source of any lawsuits.
The scapegoat.
Yeah, because yeah, it, like there's this tiny part of me that just think, oh my god, what if it had gone wrong? And like, I could end up in very serious trouble.
Your life would have taken a very different turn, I think.
Yes, this podcast would have been celebrating your release from prison.
Yeah, quite possibly.
But it isn't, and it didn't, and it went well, and you're very happy.
Yes.
You have the time to be happy now, and you seem happy telling that story.
I'm very happy telling that story.
Splendid. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/NewGenerationProjectPodcast. We are also on Twitter.
At the Keep the Lights On, Please.
New Gen Podcast. You can, as ever, rate, review and subscribe for all of our episodes as soon as they are available in iTunes. If iTunes isn't your thing, you can also check out new episodes on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/newgenpodcast, on Stitcher Radio or on piledriverwrestling.net. If you've just found us and want to catch up, our back catalogue is going up one by one on botchamania.com. Calling Spots issue 18 is now available over at callingspots.com. This issue features a cover article on NXT champion Finn Balor, an interview with TNA wrestler Robbie E, and a piece on the legacy of one Psycho Sid. Have you had a chance to read much of it, Paul? I notice it's next to your toilet.
It's not a comment on it, by the way.
It's not some sort of dirty protest.
It's not a dirty protest. No, I've perhaps read about a third of your article so far. But I shall endeavour to read more.
It's certainly a good issue. It's the biggest issue they've ever done. Really good stuff. All available at callingspots.com for $1.99. Subscriptions are also available and advised. If you do have an extra spare cash and would like to give some of it to us, head on over to newgenpodcast.bigcartel.com to grab a Scrivens 3.14 t-shirt for just $12.99 plus postage. In addition to the t-shirt, you will get access to our very special Total Divas episode available exclusively with the t-shirt. newgenpodcast.bigcartel.com if you want to pick one up. If you don't fancy a t-shirt but would like to listen to us discuss Total Divas, then head over to selfie.com/newgenpodcast and pick up the Double Cross as an instant download for just $1.99. All purchases help support the podcast in terms of funding the hosting, and we do genuinely appreciate those who choose to give a little something back.
We do.
Episode 51 will see us take a look at the career of someone who, woo, did it all by himself. In the new WWE DVD Blu-ray set, Owen Hart of Gold.
Ooh.
So the new Owen Hart documentary that's released over here on December the 7th, we're going to be taking a look at that, giving it a bit of a review. You excited to see stuff? That?
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
So I'm slightly apprehensive as well.
Okay.
I mean, have they got access to, like, all of the material? Because I know that his wife didn't or wasn't on board with WWE productions and whatnot. So there's a bit of controversy there, isn't there?
So there should be plenty for us to discuss and yes. take a look at. There's also one match I want us to do in our traditional match style.
Okay.
So we'll be doing that. Obviously, a lot of the bigger ones on there we'll have seen, and some of his latter stuff you guys will have seen. But there was one match that we won't get to cover as part of the podcast, but this provides us with that opportunity. So that's really quite cool. And yeah, it seems like the sort of thing we should take a look at.
Cool.
Courtesy of the folks at wwedvd.co.uk. Much appreciated.
Very kind of them.
And we'll get a chance to answer some more of your questions at the start of the episode as well. My name is Stuart Brooks. Good night.
I'm Adam White. Goodbye.
I'm the very happy at yes, Paul Scrivens 100% and stuff. Goodbye.
He crosses, he crosses, he crosses. It's what the sun.